DeMarco Show, the best wrestling program on the planet. Greg DeMarco Show, the best wrestling program on the planet.
As the face of the WWE goes, it's time for that face to change. Now, you guys have to understand, I don't look like Randy Orton. I mean, look at him. I mean, he's chiseled, he's tall, he's like 6'5". And look at him, he's pretty. He's just so pretty. I mean, look at him. You know, I can see why Triple H likes him so much. He's just so pretty. He's been handed every opportunity here in the WWE. He's created his own success, but your opportunities have come because your father was here, your grandfather was here, and you have been given the genetic golden ticket to be here in the WWE. I had to wrestle in every dirty high school gymnasium all across the country, all across the world, in staph-infested mats, all over the place, sleeping in my car, just to get an ounce of respect, just so I can climb the ladder of success step by step. Because guess what? I am not tall, and I am certainly not pretty.
Greg DeMarco Show.
There's a lot of things I like, and I like the Greg DeMarco Show.
Greg DeMarco, I love you.
Really?
This is Leanne Marie, and I just wanted to say that I love Patrick O'Dowd.
We all love Greg DeMarco.
Really?
I like Greg DeMarco.
Sometimes at night, we spoon.
Anybody got time for that?
No, Greg. No, Greg. I'm serious. I love you.
Don't do it like that, baby.
Patrick, is someone tuckered out? Oh, sneaky. You gotta go to bed, huh?
Damn!
We all love Greg DeMarco.
That I love Patrick O'Dowd.
Yeah! Greg DeMarco, I love you.
Oh, you guys are so adorable.
That's going to be a soundbite right there.
You're welcome.
You're listening to the Perfect 10, Scarlett Bordeaux, and that's not fit come off really weird. Oh my God, see, this is what happens when you're trying too hard. That's what happens. That's why I just got to, third time's a charm. This is the Perfect 10, Scarlett Bordeaux, and you're listening to the Greg DeMarco Show, the only show, the best show on the web.
Damn.
Radio Powerhouse, Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, excuse me. This is the Greg DeMarco Show with Patrick O'Dowd and Sue Young, and for the first time in a couple weeks, all parties are accounted for. That's right, Patrick O'Dowd.
The Wrestling News, Patrick O'Dowd.
That's enough of that, Patrick O'Dowd. I think you heard enough of your favorite, one of your favorite songs. I shouldn't say your favorite song.
That
wouldn't be fair. That would not be fair. But Patrick O'Dowd, you do not come alone.
We're beautiful and we wrestle.
That is right. Greg DeMarco Show listeners everywhere around the world are rejoicing at the sound of Sue Young's voice. Sue Young, Welcome back.
I've missed you guys. So many adventures to tell you about.
I know, not
so
as
many.
Much as we have missed you. That's for sure. Including last week, you were too busy winning the Air Sex Championship at Austin, Texas, and making us proud, making everyone here at the Greg DeMarco Show proud with your Air Sex prowess.
Yes, you guys can now say that DeMarquette is and forever will be an Air Sex Champion. Always.
Of course.
My name's written down in history.
Cool.
You can never, ever take that away. Sue Young, a master of the air sex.
Oh, shucky, ducky, quack, quack.
But we will get some of those stories. Of course, we picked a jam-packed week to have that happen, as the show is just crazy, crazy packed today with guests galore, as we have Michael Kingston, the creator and writer of the comic Headlocked, joining us on the show to talk about that project, as well as Absolute Intense Wrestling's Eric Ryan on the show, and a quick stop in from our good friend Gabriel Gallo. And somewhere in there, we're going to talk about some professional wrestling. So including Sue Young just a couple nights ago, back on iPay-Per-View Shine 12 as well. So you've been busy, Sue. You've been very, very busy.
Yes, and I like I said before, I think that I do want to give credit to where credit is due, and ever since I kind of came on the show, I have gotten, you know, a little more people, like, reading my resume going, oh, you're on the Greg DeMarco Show? Yeah, we're going to book you. So thanks, guys.
Yeah, it's funny that they booked you despite that fact. They still booked you. That's amazing.
No.
That's what makes me happy, is that it hasn't cost you anything.
Yeah, I mean, that is saying a lot for one of the most despised men on the internet.
Yeah, I swear, especially after the past couple of weeks.
Trolls are hungry.
I've been hungry over on the 411. They don't like my opinion, Sue Young. In fact, they don't like my opinion about the very topic we're going to talk about, and that is AJ Styles. Because AJ Styles' TNA contract set to expire in September. They have not reached a deal. And my opinion is that he should go. He should leave, and he should seek employment out with the WWE. And we only have a few minutes to talk about it. And Sue, you know, I'll ask you. I mean, the WWE, for many people, is viewed as the pinnacle, the mountaintop. And do you think this is something that AJ Styles should try to do?
I think that AJ was in the beginning of TNA, you know, and that is pretty much like home base for him, kind of. And I think that if he wanted to, like, expand and try new things, or if he wants to do something along those lines, WWE would be great, but it's not knocking TNA, because he'll always be a star in TNA, you know what I mean? It's one of those things where, you know, whenever you think of TNA, you kind of think of AJ Styles as well, because he's been there since, you know, the beginning, pretty much. That's my opinion on it. If he wants to, like, try something else and grow and, you know, because TNA isn't as internationally known as WWE is, and WWE is the pinnacle of wrestling in the sense of, like, it is the top, in my opinion anyways, it is the top where you can go and make the most money you can. I don't understand, like, if people don't want to make a lot of money and they're happy with what they're doing, that's awesome, that's cool. But, like, WWE is where you want to go if you want to, like, live your dream without having to pay for the consequences, in the sense of, like, you know, you won't really have to worry about bills and such.
Oh, yeah, no, and I mean, and that does seem to be kind of what it's coming down to with the contract situation. He makes a lot of money for a TNA guy because he's been there for 10 years. And some of the reports, whether we choose to believe him or not, Patrick O'Dowd, kind of seem to indicate that they either want him to not get a raise or maybe even, you know, stay for less money. So what is your opinion on this whole AJ Styles situation with TNA?
Well, I do question whether or not he's really, like, looking to go to the WWE. I do think that if reports are to be believed, and if you're looking at what's being said as true, it's like you said, they're either looking for him to not get any sort of raise, or maybe even offer, as they talk about in the sports world, a hometown discount sort of deal, where they're asking him to take less money because the company, and I just every week that we talk about TNA, the question of how they're doing financially seems to pop up, and this would seem to be, you know, a further piece of evidence for it. I personally think AJ should go if that's what he wants to do. I think that you know, as much as we can talk about TNA being big time and him being synonymous, as you said, it's not the top. It's not the pinnacle. And I think that of all the guys that have come out of TNA that are kind of considered homegrown TNA guys, I do think the WWE would look at him hard. And I think they would, you know, sign him and book him well, and get him over even bigger than what he's ever been, because I think he's got the skills and the talent. He's definitely got the looks to be something successful in the WWE.
Yeah, he does have what it takes, I think, and of all the people in TNA. And it was reported, you know, when Joe's contract was up, he sent feelers to the WWE, and there was no interest, and there was thought that Bobby Roode may have done the same thing. We don't know if that's true or not, mm-hmm. but, you know, it's like Sue said, like, that's the place that you want to go and be. And I would think that AJ Styles, a guy who many people consider to be one of the best performers in the world, deep down inside has to have that desire to compete at WrestleMania, to perform at the highest level. It's just different. The production is different. It just really is. You know, I watched some Impact Wrestling on DVR and then immediately switched to SmackDown on DVR. And even though Impact's on the road, it's still like night and day. I mean, if you compare the products, you know, side by side, Sue, it's there really is no comparison between the two companies when you look at them that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just can't imagine why he wouldn't want to, I guess. And that's kind of what strikes me. And it's sort of in that, falls in that we will see kind of a category, because we just don't know what's going to happen with AJ Styles and with TNA in general. And I think that'll be a big indicator of whether or not these rumors, the financial situation, are true, because that's a big step. If they say no to the guy who's been there since day one, who literally wrestled in the very first match of TNA's history, won a title on the second card and a title on the third card, I mean, there's no one more synonymous with TNA. Like, there's two guys, AJ Styles and James Storm, who have been there since day one, and I think we'd all put AJ at least slightly above James Storm, if not a lot above.
I was going to say, I don't James think Storm. It's that close. I mean, James Storm is nice and all, but again, AJ's the one, even right now, he's being set up as a company savior. Like,
right.
He gets the Sting treatment with TNA.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he definitely does. I mean, there was a thought when we were sitting at Slammiversary that they might say his name when they were talking about putting somebody in the Hall of Fame. They didn't. They said Kurt Angle's name, which, again, Sting and Kurt Angle being the first two Hall of Fame inductees, kind of weird if you think about when it's TNA and their history. But, you know, they're going for the big names. So, interesting stuff for AJ Styles. And I don't think the story's going anywhere. It'll probably be more ups and downs in reporting than is really true. Which is something that we'll have to find out about. But we'll see. It'll give us plenty to talk about. And that's something that I appreciate. So AJ Styles can look at us and say,
"You're welcome."
We appreciate that, AJ Styles. We definitely appreciate that. Sue, I have to go and grab our guest, but what I'd like you, Patrick, to do is maybe kind of fill him in on what happened this Friday night over at Shine with the card, as well as, you know, you found yourself on the rough end of a little bit of an attack as well. So.
Yeah, that was not cool at all. And it was a nice debut for Daphne's All-Star Squad, which I'm happy for them. But, you know, I felt very betrayed and very, maybe I don't really know what's going on, but I didn't understand why I had to be attacked. I mean, you know, it's just a little confusing right now.
So back me up here. What went down?
So we had the first match, which was me and Tracy Taylor, West Coast Connection, against Daphne's All-Star Squad, which had Daphne by ringside, Nikki Rocks, and Solo Darling. And the match was, you know, a good, like, we had fun. It was a good time, but at the end, I made a little critical mistake, and, you know, I got pinned. But I didn't understand why Christina Barnieri had to run out, because, in my opinion,
if you're the next match on the card, you should be preparing for a match versus worrying about things that happened in the past. And if I really, if you really want to know, like, yes, I'm hired by Anthony Nese. I'm his man, or, well, I'm his secretary. And as his secretary, I'm do, you know, I do what he asked me to do because he's hired, he hired me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing my job. There's no need to retaliate. And that's
no,
what she
well,
did. And apparently she acted like a big baby about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of fragile egos out there, and I mean, you've got a lot of drama you got to deal with when you have that kind of responsibility.
Too much drama.
Too much drama.
Like, there's so much drama. There's too much drama going on. Why can't we just wrestle?
We can't. If we just wrestled, then the show would be a lot more boring, I think.
Maybe. I don't know. It could get kind of interesting if we're talking about just, like, I don't know, figure fours and stuff, like atomic drops. Sometimes
figure
things get a little crazy.
They do
figure
get a little crazy.
Atomic drops.
Figure fours and atomic drops. It's really about all there is to wrestling anymore, too, right?
That's it. If you're doing anything else, then you're just wrestling too much, I think.
You're too technically gifted in the ring.
Listen,
you need two moves.
Stop trying to evolve this wrestling stuff. Just let it be.
Sue Young, you're so good, you don't need five moves of doom. Is that what I'm hearing? You only need two? It's two moves of doom?
Hey, it's either going to be the figure four or the atomic drop. Your choice.
Nice, nice. Hey, you know what? I can think of worse fates to happen.
It's true. It's really true, though. Worse things could have happened to me that night, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, I haven't. There's so much tension going on. Like,
yeah.
I acted out a little bit on my own, and I want to apologize to anybody who felt offended by what I did. I didn't, you know, a little bit of me, and I feel bad about it, became childish. And, you know, I had a talk with Lexi, and, you know, she calmed me down. And I do want to apologize right now. I don't want to, like, run out on anyone's match or anything like that. And I did that night. I didn't know. That shouldn't have happened. I just, you know,
yeah,
when you push so far,
it sounds like the moment got the best of you.
It did.
Got a little worked up.
Oh, don't make excuses. Don't make
excuses.
You should have. You should have retaliated. The girl jumped you. That's wrong. That's just wrong.
I'm being supportive here, Greg.
I know you are.
Someone has to be the bigger person in this. You know, if she wants to have a match out of this, I'm down. I just, it's just not right for me to retaliate after what she did to me in retaliation to what I did to her. Like, retaliations are bad. Let's just not do it. Let's just have
Sue, matches. Sue Young is so nice, Patrick O'Dowd.
I'm trying to be nice right now.
She's very kind. She's a good soul.
She is.
I am, but
she is.
A lot of things happened that night. I mean, Malaya Ibaka wrestled.
Mm-hmm, I know.
Malaya Ibaka wrestled, guys.
That's a big deal.
That is a huge deal because Malaya Ibaka has a lot of influence in my career.
Yeah, she got back in the ring unexpectedly, and of course, and the thing about the attack, like Christina wanted to hear on you, is that you guys will cross paths again, and you may cross paths in a place like Evolve or Dragon Gate USA,
yep.
where Sue Young not so nice. Sue Young involved with the Premier Athlete brand, you know, that Sue Young not going to be hesitant to punch somebody in the face. So she
not
just needs
so
to watch out.
No.
She just needs to
I don't know what
out.
It is, but I feel like Mr. A brings out, like, some side of me. Because there's a lot of pressure being Anthony Meese's, you know, secretary. He's very,
yeah.
very particular about things. And sometimes that gets a little stressful where you just sometimes just have to punch someone in the face. Just sometimes,
See?
Though.
Exactly. And you know what? We're particular about things, too, including people jumping our girl Sue Young.
That ain't right, man.
It ain't right at all. So, but it is time
right.
to bring our guest on the program.
It's time!
grab that rundown and get ready as we are pleased to welcome to the show the man behind the Headlock Comics, the creator and the writer, and that is Michael Kingston. Michael, welcome to the Greg DeMarco Show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
We're doing very well. We're super excited that you're on, and excited to hear more about the product. Now, I want to know, comics and wrestling are something that have been intertwined for a lot of people for a lifetime. But which came first for you? Was it the love for comics or the love that wrestling that sort of got you first?
I think I read comics before I watched wrestling, but I got hardcore into wrestling before I got hardcore into comics, if that makes sense. About 8 years old for both.
Gotcha. Very good. But one obviously picked up steam before the other, and that makes sense. I think that's kind of what grasped you. What really did grasp you about those? What turned you into that hardcore fan?
I think, well, for wrestling, it was just I was watching Saturday Night's Main Event. Like, I was flipping channels, and it came on, and George Animal Steel was on, and I was instantly transfixed. And I just wanted to watch more wrestling from that moment on. He was doing his turnbuckle thing and going crazy, and I'd never seen anything like it. And I watched it the next morning. You know, it was in syndication, and I guess in some way, shape, or form, I watched it, you know, ever since for the rest of my life. So, you know, that was definitely the turning point.
You know, Patrick Dowd, he's not the first person to bring up George the Animal Steel as someone who got people hooked on wrestling. It's, you know, not really the person that we would think about, but yet it's probably the third person that we've interviewed maybe in the past year or two that have brought up George the Animal Steel specifically as someone who got them sucked into wrestling.
It's a highly entertaining character. Like, he's a highly entertaining character. So it's you talk about larger-than-life personas, like, he had that in a way that really did appeal to a lot of people. So not a big surprise.
Yeah. So Michael,
I would also
wait.
Say that was...
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that was kind of the hook. I mean, I don't think... You know what I mean? Like, that was what got me to stop switching mm-hmm. channels for a second. But then, you know, I think the first wrestler who was my favorite wrestler was Tito Santana and Mike Rotundo, because I was from Syracuse, and he was from Syracuse, and I thought that was pretty cool as a kid.
You're talking Patrick O'Dowd's language
dude,
right now.
Well, and so huge. I love Tito Santana. My favorite tag team of all time is Strike Force, him and Rick Martel.
I watched them win the belts. That was my first ever live title change I ever got to see, because that happened in Syracuse.
Nice. I'm so jealous of you right now. Oh my God. I don't even know what to say.
That's okay, because I'll ask another question. We'll allow you a moment to gather your thoughts. So what gets you to go from comic book fan to comic book creator and writer? Like, what makes you decide, I'm going to dive in and do this?
I had read comics for a long time, mostly just superhero stuff. And then there was a book that somebody had recommended me. It was called Concrete, Think Like a Mountain, and it totally blew my mind. Like, it was a completely different type of story. And, you know, I don't know how well you know comics, but, it's a story about a man who's encased in concrete, and he's sort of like the ultimate observer. And it was just him being talked by a bunch of members of the group Earth First, which is a radical environmentalist group, into trying to help them get their message out. And it's sort of, it's not what you'd expect out of comics. You know, it was kind of, you know, walking the line between, how can you say you support things without actually participating in them? And, you know, there was a whole bunch of different sort of ethical issues, and it was educational at the same time, but it was still a very cool story. And I had never read anything other than superhero books at that point. And, you know, after I read that, I was like, wow, you know, like, it just totally made me want to be a comic book writer. And then, I decided I wanted to write a book about wrestling.
Nice. And, I've been looking through, I do follow comics, so I think I have a little bit of a grasp of some of the folks that are some of the stories that seem to have influenced you. But tell us a little bit and tell our listeners a little bit about the story behind Headlocked. What are we seeing here?
Okay, Headlock is about a kid who's a theater major in college who falls in love with wrestling kind of unexpectedly, and it just takes over his life, and he drops out of school, and it's him sort of his journey through the wrestling business from, like, the moment he falls in love with it, and, you know, as far as we can take that story. And the idea is, as he's learning the business, you're kind of learning it through his eyes, and you're sort of examining the craft of wrestling through the eyes of a performance artist. But at the same time, it's kind of like a cable drama type story where he's sort of navigating the underbelly of the wrestling business, trying to get to the bright lights and the big stage.
One of my favorite taglines out of the comic that I really think is true is with the main character talking about he views wrestling as like the highest form of drama. Was that something that you sort of followed up with, or that you believed that you then put on the page, or where did that influence come?
I mean, it's just something that I've come to appreciate over time. I think, you know, I think the same thing with, I think wrestling and comics are both incredibly underutilized storytelling mediums. And I think, you know, I think as far as the mainstream is concerned, they think about wrestling and they think about WWE, and when they think about comic books, they think about superheroes. But, you know, I mean, there's been a lot of other types of stories told in both of those mediums. I just don't think that it gets the recognition that it's deserved, you know, for its the breadth of stories that you can tell. So, you know, I guess I feel like it belongs, the story belongs in a comic book just because they both, as mediums, they're both so similar. But I think, you know, that's kind of what I wanted to bring to light, you know, by telling the story. And I wanted people to be able to see that, like, you know, be able to see wrestling through my eyes, you know, and all the things, all the reasons why I like it and, you know, why other people might like it. Because sometimes I think people don't like it, but that doesn't necessarily come from an informed place or even an experiential place. I think people just think, okay, I don't like it. And, you know, some people say that and they've never even watched it or tried it. So, you know, I think if you can give somebody a different perspective on it and sort of wrap it up in an entertaining story, then maybe you can, you know, win some hearts and minds.
Now I couldn't help but notice, and people, if people want to check this out, headlockedcomic.com is where you can get some more information about this comic. But there's a very nice character bio sheet. Anybody connected? Any of these characters connected to wrestlers that you watched growing up, or even wrestlers now? I mean, is there an influence with the WWE or TNA or any of the other groups out there?
I mean, I wanted it to be, like, the most important thing for the book for me is to make it accessible to anyone. Like, I mean, obviously I want wrestling fans to read it, but I also don't want to make it, you know, exclude anybody else. So I tried to make the book as accessible as possible. So most of the main sort of, you know, wrestlers from the big televised Fed there are all sort of based on popular archetypes that people might know. Because I think even now, even though people think of, you know, Austin or The Rock or whatever, I still think in most people's mind, like casual people's mind, I think when they think of wrestling, they think of 1980s WWF. So I tried to base it somewhat on that, just so it would feel familiar to people before we, you know, start. You know, I wanted to have them start from a place of comfort before I start tweaking with their minds.
Yeah, and it's really uncanny, like, as you look through and you see some of the characters' names, like, I nod when you're reading about the bios and you see what's on there. It's spot on. It's really good. How did you get Jerry Lawler involved?
It was the weirdest thing. I emailed him through his website, and, you know, it was such an odd thing. Like I forgot it. I did it after I did it. It was such like a weird long shot. And, you know, like a week later I got an email and I think, oh, it's an automated response or something from like his webmaster or whatever. And it was from him. And he said, send me some books. And I sent him some books. And then he called me like a week later and he's like, sure, I'll do it. And it was the craziest thing for me. Like, I mean, I grew up as a kid, you know, trading for Memphis tapes. So, you know, being at a point in my life where, you know, I get to work with somebody that I grew up, you know, admiring, and to the point now that I can call him a friend, I think is really very surreal and one of the cooler parts of this whole process for me.
And for those of you who don't know what we're referencing, Jerry Lawler actually does the some of the cover art for the comics, correct? Now, is it every issue, or is it just is it kind of every now and then he sort of rotates in?
I did an issue without him, and then he did the first issue of our mini series, and then he did the collected edition, and now he's going to do all of them from here on out.
Very cool. So I got one last question before I let Sue Young jump in and ask you a question. As I was going through the website, and there's a really nifty photo gallery that sort of shows you at various cons and locations with different wrestlers posing with the comic. Who would you say is the most? Would you say it was probably the biggest surprise to you that was a fan of the work or was a fan of comics that you maybe didn't expect?
I don't know. I mean, it always kind of surprised me. I mean, obviously there's some people that you know, but I think on some level, almost everybody has some knowledge of something, you know? And I mean, I guess when you're there as an exhibitor and people, you know, and they're there as exhibitors, people tend to give you a little more courtesy. So I don't know. You know what I mean? Like there's nobody I guess I always try to keep an open mind about that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I don't know if I have a good answer for that.
Well, maybe you'll have a good answer for my question then. So let's just say there was a fiery, sexy Asian female. Like, how would she go about becoming a comic book character?
I don't know. That's a tough one. We have, through our Kickstarter, we're making a bunch of people into wrestlers. We've had some people donate to be drawn into the book.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's actually been our more popular incentive. They kind of sold out right away, which just kind of blows my mind. But, I mean, I'm obviously very grateful because I wouldn't be at my goal without them. But we just try to, you know, like, I put Daivari, he was the first wrestler I'd ever actually made any sort of connection with. And he was an enormous fan of the book. And, I mean, you could just tell. Like, he was super enthusiastic about it and about, you know, wrestling and comics and whatnot. And that's always kind of been my thing. Like, you know, I've had wrestlers beg me to be in this book. Like, I've had people, you know, have their agents call me and stuff, which I think is just weird because I'm a small independent comic book. I just want people who are passionate about wrestling and comics and whatnot, you know, like I don't want to get into a position where I feel like I have to put people over or try to sell action figures or anything like that. I just want to tell my story and, I want the sort of the passion for wrestling and comics to come out in the work.
That is amazing. I honestly, if this became a brand where you actually did have the action figures and stuff, that would be so cool to see. But another thing I wanted to ask you is, where do you draw the inspiration for the characters in your comic?
Obviously I've been a wrestling fan for years. I mean, it's been tricky. When I made the sort of the WWF style guys, I mean, a lot of that was just sort of designed to make it, like I said, make it accessible to the populace. I mean, you don't really need any of those characters because you're sort of following the main, you know, the main character starting from zero. So, I mean, while you have to know who Hulk Hogan is, you don't really meet Hulk Hogan for a long time. For the new book that we're kickstarting, we're taking a little bit of a different tactic and placing it inside of a place that we call the Last Territory. And so we've built this sort of crazy cast of wrestlers, and it's all sort of, you know, they all kind of have their own story, and it's all sort of ties into Mike Hartman's story as he's, you know, learning the wrestling business. So it's definitely been, that part of it's been a lot of fun, a lot more fun for me than I guess creating some of the initial characters. But the guys that we're doing now are going to be a lot of fun.
Do you ever, like, grab inspiration from any of the comic cons you go to, or, like, any comic, like, not really comic, but I guess, like,
anything you see on TV, like characters off of TV or anything along those lines?
I mean, everything to me is inspiration. I mean, I work in a hospital, you know, in real life, I guess. And, I mean, I see people all the time and I, you know, I mean, just, I meet people, I meet characters and I just watch people, I guess. And I don't know, like people who follow me on Facebook know about my gym rage, but, I'm not a particular fan of a lot of the people that go to my gym, and people are always like, you know, I never see that at my gym. And I'm like, oh, they're there. You just got to look. And I just think I have a keen observational eye.
That's awesome.
No, it's interesting that you picked Texas, too, when you talked about, you know, for that last territory. And as Sue can tell you, like, she works plenty in Texas. There really are some crazy characters in the state of Texas.
There are. Totally.
Well, the idea was, being it's the last territory, I had to think of a reason to make a guy. It's sort of built around one guy who's a sort of hyper-regional star. So I know people are a little ridiculous about college or high school football in Texas, so... The idea being is the main champion of that territory had, you know, won the town's only high school football championship. Like, he made the play that won the game, and then he became a wrestler after that. So he's, like, a legend there and still a draw, you know, 40 years later. But, you know, he doesn't mean anything anywhere else. So it's one of the areas that, you know, still sort of survived, like, the national expansion. And I think it's kind of an interesting way to – sort of look at the past, but do it in the present.
Yeah, very realistic too. Texas really does still have a pretty good territorial feel to it, and as we've talked to, we have a DeMarc Gettney and Barbie Hayden who lives there, and she has a hard time getting out of Texas because there's so much work there. So that does make sense. And you mentioned the Kickstarter campaign. I want to talk about that. The Kickstarter campaign gotten plenty of publicity. It's already funded, but I mean, there's still plenty more that can be done. Say someone were to go on Kickstarter and search for Headlocked, because they don't make it easy with the link. But if you go to Kickstarter, search for Headlocked, and they decide to pledge, where's that money going if somebody does pledge on the Kickstarter?
Everything goes to, like, me personally, like, I'll never make a dime off of Headlocked. And I'm okay with that. You know, I do this because I love it, and it's so much fun, and I have a passion for both of these things. I mean, if I ever get into a position to make some money, that's great, but it's not anything that I'm kind of counting on. We have three full-time artists that work on the book, and they would like to keep their electric on. So the money goes to the full-time artists that work on the book. It goes to printing. It goes to shipping. And anything we make above just goes into future editions of the book. I just want to keep telling the story as long as I can tell it.
Awesome. And you've got some amazing perks. And so, I mean, this isn't, you know, the great thing about Kickstarter is you always get something for backing a project on Kickstarter. What kind of perks have you put together? Because you've put together some of the best perks that I've ever seen on a Kickstarter project.
Well, one of the things that I think the best thing is that the edition of the book that we're funding is only going to be available to people on Kickstarter. But we have an edition to Jerry. Jerry's doing the cover. We have Rob Van Dam and Shane Helms and Christopher Daniels contributing short stories, and then Ken Anderson and Beth Phoenix and Sin Bodie are contributing art to the book as well. And, I mean, at some point we'll be reprinting the Headlock stories and selling them at conventions and whatnot, but the wrestler content is exclusive to the people who back us on Kickstarter. This Kickstarter for us is, like, the most important thing, like, for the future of the property, I think. You know, one of the things I've always had to battle is people saying that they didn't think wrestling comics would sell and wrestling fans, you know, don't read and all these other nonsensical things. And I always, you know, I mean, I sell the books well at shows and people like them. And, I mean, all these wrestlers, you know, volunteered to help me out, you know. So, obviously, they've liked it as well. But I just haven't been able to – you can't prove marketability to people who don't understand wrestling, you know. They'll look at the wrestler and Ready to Rumble and just look at them as two wrestling movies and not realize how very different they are. So – everything that we do for this, this is, you know, this the number that we generate will – help us going forward to prove, you know, that the concept is marketable and that there's a market for a product that treats wrestling and wrestlers and wrestling fans with respect. So even though we are funded, I definitely, we definitely want to get it as big as we possibly can. And like I said, we got some really cool stuff for people that, that help us out as like a reward for backing us when we need the most.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to get, I mean, you know, all the way down to the $5 level, you're going to get stuff. And then, you know, and it's going to keep on going up. And the more you pledge, I mean, the more stuff that you get. And there's some amazing stuff. I mean, it's like you said, the, you know, so, some of them have already sold out. And but yet there's still plenty on there, including, you know, like you said, the ability to even be in, you know, be in a comic as a character. So pretty amazing things that you have on there. One of them I noticed was the main event, where you get the signed copy, you get all the goodies as well, everything that everyone's submitted, and then you can also throw in another $20 and get the official T-shirt designed by Gimmicks Wrestling Tees, which, by the way, designed Sue Young's T-shirt at one point as well. So, in during this interview, the Greg DeMarco Show has now officially become a backer of the Headlocked Project. So we are on board. I wanted to do it on the air, and it is done. And I'm even going to give the T-shirt to Patrick O'Dowd. That's what I've decided.
Oh.
Yeah, he will wear the heck out of it. I promise you that.
He will.
He definitely will do that. And so yeah, we on the Greg DeMarco Show are definitely on board with the project. I think it's awesome, and I hope that it just continues to grow and continues to be successful.
And we do have one more name that we haven't revealed yet, and when we hit 19,000, we're gonna reveal that name. We have one last person who's contributed to the book, who's a pretty good name that I think it's different than people will expect, but I think it's really cool at the same time.
Only $50 away now, so if anybody is listening and wants to jump in, we're $50 away from revealing what that name is, because right now it's at 18,000. I'm sorry, it's $450 away. I can't do it in my head.
$450. Whoa, you had me
confused there
for a second.
I had myself confused. I'm sure you're watching it closely. You probably get alerts, which is good for you to be able to do that. But the good thing is that this thing is funded, though. So it's getting, like, it's funded now. It passed the goal, so this money's going to them. But keep going. Like, it's, you're still able to support a great product. If you haven't seen the Kickstarter site for it, definitely check it out. It's got an awesome video, great explanation of everything that's on there. And just kind of talks about, you know, the character leaving Philadelphia, going to Texas. Like, it really does put on a great view of what the comic is, as well as of all you guys, which I think is phenomenal, and I think people will love to see that and get involved with that. In terms of you, where can people find you? You talked about Facebook, and I'm sure Twitter and everything. Like, what's the best way for people to connect with you, as well as the Headlocked series?
It's everything associated with the book. It's Headlocked Comics. It's my Facebook, my Twitter, Instagram. It's my Xbox gamer tag if you want to play. It's our website is headlockcomic.com. So we try to make it simple. It's all run by me. So, you know, you're going to be get questions or concerns or whatever. You know, I'm always willing to talk about it.
Yeah, no, this is, I mean, I'm sure this is obvious to everybody. We're just stating the obvious, but it's your life's work at this point. Like, this is, you know, everybody usually finds that one thing, whether it's what pays the bills or not, that one thing that they're just fully committed to, and this has become this for you. I mean, this is your legacy at this point, and it's pretty awesome, I got to admit.
It's interesting that you recognize that, because I tell you, it is, and I mean, like, I don't think I've slept more than 3 hours in a clip since this thing started back in July 15th. It's very nerve-wracking to take something. I mean, I have put, you know, years into this and sort of hanging out on the internet to be judged. And you feel it, you know, like whenever somebody pledges, like it you know, it feels good. But I mean, by the same token, people retract pledges. And that, I tell you what, you know, I mean, obviously I've had way more people pledge than retract. But, you know, those couple people that have retracted pledges, I mean, it's like getting punched in the stomach. I'm not going to lie to you. It's it's a very nerve-wracking thing, you know. And like I said, for me, like, this is the most important thing to, I think, the long-term future of the book is, you know, how we finish on this. So I'm really, you know, and I just want readers, you know, I'm not asking for people to, I don't want people to donate $1,000 or anything like that. I just, you know, I just want people that want to read the book and, you know, they, you know, whether it's in digital or in physical form, you know, and that's all I want. I want readers. So, you know, we can be self-sustaining and pay our art costs and, you know, keep telling the story as long as we can. I mean, I think there's a million things in wrestling to explore, and it's such an amazing culture that's really, I think, untapped, you know, this part of it in the entertainment world. And I think there's just a lot of cool things that you can do with it.
Yeah, I know. As someone who writes on the internet and about wrestling, I know what you're saying. Like, I get hammered on a weekly basis, and as even Sue Young can attest to, as a wrestler, like, there are plenty, as many people are out there that love everything that we do, we all know there's critics, too. I mean, you know, Sue gets critics. We don't listen to Sue's critics because Sue's amazing, but, you know, they're out there. They show their head every once in a while.
Clearly out of their mind at that point. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, and we can. You guys actually somewhat know each other. I mean, it's not like you guys the first time you
yes.
guys ever talked to each other. So we like to be as transparent as possible on the program. So this
you
isn't the first.
You guys have seen me as the Yellow Ranger.
Oh.
And Catwoman. I believe. Did you see me as Catwoman?
Yes, I was there all night, all four nights.
You were all for all three of them, weren't you?
All four of them.
All four of them. Sorry, I can't count. I don't speak English.
It's the new mask.
It is.
The new mask.
It is. So you, I mean, and you, yeah, Patrick Dow's now jealous because you were there all four nights and he has only seen pictures. So
yeah, that's all I ever get.
Well, Michael, we appreciate you coming on. We're going to continue to follow the progress of your Kickstarter campaign. Like I said, we're now backers as the Greg DeMarco Show. We want to see it continue to grow and do well. And just like everything else in wrestling is fake, so is my name. So if you see a list of names of backers and you see something that's Greg with something else, that's probably me. But I've never hidden the fact that DeMarco is not my real name. But I'm the one who lives in Arizona. So wonderful. And just continued good luck and success to you. And we want to continue to see that thing do amazing stuff. And hopefully at some point, you know, we can bring you back on and talk about the amazing next step in the Headlock comic series. So keep up the awesome work. And we can't wait to see where it goes from here.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me on.
No problem at all. And again, everyone listening, I know you want to back it. Just head on over to Kickstarter.com and type in, just search for Headlocked, and it'll be the first thing. Four things will come up, and the one on the left is this Kickstarter campaign. Pledge, be a part of it, and there's just a ton of great perks, and you definitely will not regret it. So definitely appreciate Michael coming on. And, yeah, so Patrick and Sue, like, we got to cross genres there a little bit and talk some comics, and it was more in your guys' element than mine, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, you're not nerdy enough for that.
I'm not. It takes me back to Sue Young's first ever interview, and Patrick O'Dowd's head just exploded as Sue was going into Dungeons and Dragons, all kinds of stuff. It was just, yeah.
Those were the days.
It's just what happens. So, awesome things going on. Well, Sue, we know it's late for you, and you've been a super-duper busy person. So this is first stop. Sue Young gets off is what we're doing here. So we appreciate you coming in, and let me know what things look like for next week, and hopefully we can have you back on and have lots of fun and get some updates for the people. As today's show was a little packed, but it was fun. This was the first time we've had a chance to have Sue Young in an interview, Patrick O'Dowd.
Yeah, it was. So, this is a good extended Sue Young time.
I know.
It was awesome.
Not just that, but Sue Young, totally comfortable jumping off the script, which I think is great. I'm not saying that to be funny. I really do love that. As Patrick can tell you, I'm all about just letting people go and do their thing.
Oh,
which is
awesome.
Hard for you to work with.
Yeah. Although, as Patrick can tell you, unless their thing isn't what I wanted them to do, at which point I'm not. No, I'm just kidding. It is awesome. So, Sue, we can't wait to have you back on soon, hopefully next week, and get some rest. I know you've been busy.
Yeah, Thank you guys so much, and I will definitely see you guys very soon.
Sounds good. There you go, Patrick O'Dowd. She's gone.
Always a pleasure to have Sue Young on.
It is. It is always a pleasure to have Sue Young on the program, and super excited to have her back. And her schedule should free up. I mean, we can't blame somebody for working. You know, we just,
yeah,
we
I
just
mean,
can't.
Yeah, it's just, you know, when somebody's in demand, you have to face up to the fact that their commitments are going to be elsewhere. Can't always be for our little show.
No, and that's okay. We are 100% fine with that, because that's just kind of the way it has to be sometimes. And I have no issues with that whatsoever. So, Patrick O'Dowd, we got to take a quick break because we need to go get Eric Ryan from Absolute Intense Wrestling and bring him on the program as well. So,
all right.
We do not stop. So, you know the drill, Patrick O'Dowd. You know the choices. What shall we play?
Let's go to Bad Street.
Going old school here on the Greg DeMarco Show. So we'll take it to Bad Street, and then we will be right back on the other side with our very next guest. That would be Eric Ryan from Absolute Intense Wrestling.
Hey, this is Rain, and if I'm not kicking ass in the ring, I'm kicking ass in the gym. Or I'm listening to the Greg DeMarco Show. Boom.
I'd actually like to take this opportunity to wish
Greg DeMarco Show
the best in all his future endeavors.
Thank you.
Hi, my name's Leanne from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
And two-time VOC Nation Babe of the Week, Leanne Marie?
Cool.
Yes, it is. I heard it was a little Irishman's birthday over there, so I figured I'd get the call. Happy birthday. You know what else I heard is true? The Irishmen have a curse.
That's an urban legend.
Are you sure? Well, hopefully you can prove it to me that you're not.
Oh, hey.
Hello.
I'll have a surprise for you in Philly. So whenever you come here and you're not too scared, you can contact me. This is Leanne Marie, and I just wanted to say that I love Patrick O'Dowd.
Patrick O'Dowd, we're back.
We are back.
We are back. We are back on the Greg DeMarco Show, and all I can say... That's right. I called, and I got voicemail, So, and,
Streak broken?
Streak broken. You know, we were on a streak on the other direction for a little bit of time there.
Yeah.
And, we were on a good streak for a while there. Streak now has been broken. Hey, made a couple attempts, and,
Anybody got time for that?
That's so, right. We can move on.
I know. What's really funny is that Patrick O'Dowd, as I cut off Bad Street, he sends me a message in the private chat room that song had like 30 verses left.
It's the same verse over and over and over again.
Right? I know. It is.
It is a damn long song.
Over and over again. But Eric Ryan was going to be on the program courtesy of Absolute Intense Wrestling. And we are big-time supporters of the independent wrestling. And AIW does present Gleaming the Cube this coming Saturday, August 30th, from world-famous Turner's Hall in Cleveland, Ohio. Main event featuring Eric Ryan, former Absolute Champion, defending against Colin Delaney, Michael Hutter, which you may know as former WWE superstar Derek Bateman, and, of course, the man they're all challenging, the current Absolute Champion, a guy we know a thing or two about, Patrick O'Dowd, All Ego, Ethan Page.
He is a friend of the program.
He's a friend of the program. He's blowing up right now, which I think is great. And he will be defending the belt this Saturday, August 30th. DeMarquette Veda Scott will be in action.
Nice.
And she'll be in a one-on-one match. And there will be a six-man ladder match for the Intense Championship, also including friend of the program, Josh Alexander. So a lot of great stuff coming up for AIW this coming weekend at Gleaming the Cube. More information and tickets can be found at aiwrestling.com. Or you can just Google Absolute Intense Wrestling. Find them on Facebook. Plenty of great information out there. Patrick O'Dowd. But what does that mean for us? That means we got to talk the wrestling.
No.
Some crazy stuff. We only got to talk the wrestling for a moment, though, because we did have good friend of the program, Gabriel Gallo, coming on just to talk a little bit about his upcoming match this Thursday night at Slam U Pro, a rematch with our with the Almighty Sheik, guy that we know very well. So he'll probably be in here momentarily. But I did want to talk a little bit about a little bit of wrestling, and we talked this topic last week. We talked a bunch about Darren Young coming out of the closet on TMZ, stage, not stage, who the hell cares? But and since then, he's unbeatable right now. He's 2-0.
Oh, yeah.
He got the fall in the primetime players' first match against the team, I don't know, are they called We the People now, the Real Americans, whatever they're calling them. Got to follow Antonio Cesaro, then beat him in a one-on-one match on SmackDown. So he's doing all right. He's doing all right.
Yeah,
and an apparent fate for the primetime players as well.
Yeah, well, it's such a fascinating – it's so interesting to watch this because I think everybody assumed that the primetime players and Darren Young were going to get some sort of push. From this, what I've found really interesting is that it's just sort of like boom, there we like you now. You're good guys, and Darren Young is just gonna keep winning. And I do like that they're not necessarily being like talking about the moment on TMZ or any of that. But yeah, it's boom. We are doing an about face.
Yeah, the total about face, they bought him out as faces. And the one thing I will say is that, you know, they were they were accepted as faces pretty easily. People have immediately bought in and following along with them. And they were already over. That's the thing. It's not like they weren't over and they were just an afterthought. They were kind of over despite the WWE's best efforts before all of this. And a team that many people felt were underrated or utilized as it was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's fascinating to me the sometimes the WWE, and I don't understand why this is, the WWE sometimes fails to recognize that they give people heel gimmicks that are destined to go over because we're not in 1982. And really, like, two high-profile athletes that are just in it for the money, like, I'm not saying it's something people want to be, but people definitely find it amusing.
Oh, yeah. It's a hell of an act, and they play it well. I will say this: think back to when Abraham Washington, AW, when he was on the live mic doing the commentary during the primetime players matches, and he made the statement about Kobe Bryant, and it kind of really turned things upside down. Had that not happened, they might have been pushed to win the tag team titles. Team Hell No may not have gotten the push they got. Maybe we're not talking about Daniel Bryan every week right now. Like, it's just amazing the things that you know, if you go backwards, sometimes it just blows your mind to kind of sort of retell the story.
Yeah, it's, and that's the beauty of some live television. You know, you don't know what's going to happen. And yes, I remember sitting on this show talking about Abraham's ill-fated statement. Completely did change, maybe change the face. We don't know what was really in store for them, but they were really gaining traction at that time. And, you know, people like to toss around the word buried a lot in reference to people when they, you know, just lose. The primetime players were buried for a while.
They were. They definitely were, but still over.
Over but buried.
Yes, and that kind of tells you about an act. I mean, there are plenty of acts that are over but buried, and the primetime players were one of them, and continue to do very well with that. And so you just can't knock them for any of that whatsoever. I think it's great, and I'm glad they're getting a push just because I'm glad they're getting a push. Like, I wanted to see them get a push anyway. So it,
what do you think this does to the Usos, though? Because I think they were the group, like, this is the other sort of thing that kind of comes with the rise and fall, is that there's usually not enough room in the WWE's heart for more than one tag team story at a time.
I don't know. If you look at, I mean, Raw had two tag team matches that were all kind of pushed as having an impact on the division. So it could turn out well for the tag team division in general. Who knows? Were the Usos going to be the team to throw in the shield? We don't know.
I was like, is this hopeful Greg talking?
Yes. Yeah, it's hopeful Greg talking.
Because we've had the tag team discussion before, too.
We have. We have had the tag team discussion before. In fact, Patrick Goodell will remember, we had the tag team discussion on the rundown for like 3 months until we finally did it. So, and that was like years ago.
It does seem like years ago. It was probably like 6 months ago.
No, it was far longer than that.
It
wasn't in 2013. I think it was in 2011. So it was.
Really? It's been almost 2 years?
It's been over 2 years, Patrick Goodell. We celebrated 2 years back in May. It's, Taylor Hendricks became a DeMarquette. It was a big deal. Big show. Ethan Page was on. You were there. It was a lot of fun.
Trying to clarify. We were talking about when we were claiming that tag team wrestling was back.
Recent. Tag team wrestling being back was more recent, but we actually put the tag team wrestling subject on the table for quite a long time there because we just wanted to talk about it, and we're finally able to bring it up and definitely talk about it. So yeah, big things going on. But the fact of the matter is, the primetime players getting the push, we don't, you know, I'm sure it's due to the publicity associated with Darren Young, but people get their opportunities for various reasons and whatever. This is what it takes to get the primetime players a push. I'm all for it because I was entertained by them for quite a long time, and I hope it continues. And you know, I'm just – you definitely saw the reception like it was good, and they can keep going with it because I think it's a good thing. So –
yeah, absolutely. We'll I think it's a step in the right direction for them, and yeah, I hopefully it catapults them in a good way. You know, I hope it, you know, there's always two ways that sort of push can go, because it sure could go the way of a Chavo, or you know, no, and I'm not saying that to be mean, but there are those times when the push does result in a little bit of a push. And then it just as quickly goes, you know, that it's there, goes away. And so I hope that it turns into sustained momentum. How's that?
No, I agree. And I hope it turns into sustained momentum for the division. And again, that's hopeful, yep. Greg, talking, like you said before. But I do hope it turns into something for the division in general. So, but we do, you know, we talked about earlier, we did have good friend Gabriel Gallo set to join us as well. On the line and ready to go, Patrick O'Dowd. So
excellent.
We will bring him in, headlining Thursday night's Slam U Pro event in Mesa, Arizona, at the Arizona Event Center, against the Almighty Sheik. And we'll talk about the type of match that is here momentarily. That is my good friend Gabriel Gallo. Gallo, welcome back.
Thanks, Greg, for having me again.
Oh, any time at all. We definitely love supporting the product. And like I said, Slam U Pro does return to Mesa, Arizona, Thursday, August 29th, 7:30 p.m. for VIP ticket holders. And you were, of course, main eventing the first show with the Almighty Sheik. What were your impressions of the first Slam U Pro event in July?
It was a lot of fun. I don't think I've heard of a crowd really that loud and raunchy out here. They were actually, with the fact that nobody was out there telling them that they couldn't be as loud as they wanted to, it was, I think, a different thing out here. They were having a lot of fun. The matches were great. We had a lot of good talent on that first show. And I don't know, I can't really remember much of it, considering the fact that the top of my head got nearly taken off by a chair.
It did. It was nasty.
It doesn't sound like it went well.
No, and it was one of those things that, you know, we've talked about chair shots on this show. As soon as he gets hit with the chair, I'm there. I'm lucky enough to be seated in the VIP section. That chair, whack, you hear it, and I cringed. Like, that's just, you know, I cringed. I just don't like when that happens in the world of professional wrestling, but it's part of the business. I get it. And, yeah, it just is what it is, so to speak. And yeah, but it was ugly.
It was going really well up until a chair shot. It was going really well up until a chair shot.
But what you said about the crowd was true. I've been in many a wrestling show in the state of Arizona that was a rowdy crowd. Having been to wrestling events in Arizona for years, it was a new crowd, and that's what I thought was the most exciting about it. Like, these were not the same fans that you see over and over at wrestling events. It was a brand new crowd, and there was a competing event that went on the same night. So without a competing event, you could have some of the old and some of the new, and it could be very exciting this coming Thursday at the Arizona Event Center. So definitely.
Yeah, I noticed that too the last time, that there wasn't a lot of the familiar faces in the crowd. We had probably, I don't even remember how many people were there, but I remember everybody I saw. I only saw maybe three or four familiar faces. Everybody else was, like you said, completely new.
Yeah, it was. And it was pretty
different type of crowd.
I know you tell me you don't know how many.
I remember they had to bring out more chairs. They had to keep bringing out more chairs for everybody to sit in.
Yeah, they had to bring out more chairs. Yeah, I tried to count, and I definitely counted 200 people when I was in there counting myself, and that wasn't a good count. It was dark, so I'm probably wrong in a very good way. So I thought it was awesome, and I'm glad to see all those people there. I definitely hope to see that it continues as we move forward, because they're booked every month going forward, and lots of good things ahead for Slam U Pro.
And this time, it shouldn't be so dark this time. This time the venue is moving some lights around. They're putting the ring in front of the stage, and they're building a walkway to the ring. The venue's really doing a lot to make each show get better and better, too. So they're giving us more access to all the lighting rigs.
Nice.
This show should be a lot better as far as the visual perception, as well as the fact that now the TV monitors will all be running all the projection screens as well.
That's cool, yeah. And as Gallo can say, like, I left the show and that was my one feedback. It was like, you know, lighting wasn't the best and where the ring was wasn't the best, but I'm glad that the venue felt the same way, and I think it's going to really change things. So it's only going to get better. That's the best part about it. Like, you have your first show, it's a success, and then it's only up from there, which I think is great.
Yeah, hopefully all the guys and girls around the crew, all the fans, everybody had really good things to say afterwards. You know, like a lot of the crew can't wait to come back. Some of them like Jack Jameson, I know, is going to be in England, so he has to miss this show, but I know he can't wait to come back the next month for the next month's show. Everybody really enjoyed it. Everybody from the locker room all the way to the fans had a good, really good time last time.
So now I want to get back to some of the unpleasantness that we were talking about before, I guess, involving chair shots and the like. Now, you lost to the Almighty Sheik at the first show in July. But the rematch...
I didn't lose. I was disqualified.
You were disqualified. Fair enough. Okay, you know, I just read it as DeMarco writes it. That's all I'm going to say. Lay that out there.
DQ loss. It's okay.
but the rematch is definitely has some higher stakes. So why don't you talk to us about what type of match we're looking at on Thursday night?
Well, it's going to be the first time that a body bag's been introduced into a match in Arizona, and I guess I ran my mouth at the end of the last show, which I have a tendency to do. And apparently Sheik didn't like it too much, so he took what I said and, you know, talked to the owners of Slam U, and now I guess I'm stuck in Arizona's first body bag match. And apparently the only way to win this match is to get your opponent inside the body bag and zip it completely up. So I don't really know. One of us is going to have to be unconscious, I'm assuming, to be stuck inside that body bag.
Not for nothing. I mean, I've seen the Sheik and his work. Do you think that putting him under and getting him into a body bag is going to be enough to settle the score?
If not, I could always take him to the funeral home and throw him in the cremation chamber. I'm sure that would work.
Wow, now that's got a sense of finality to it right there.
I'm looking
that definitely does.
At ending this little feud. It's been going on for almost 2 years now, and this is going to be a first in Arizona, and I think it's going to be a last for the Sheik. Because if you were at the last show, and I'm sure Greg can say this, I wasn't losing that match when the ref called the match. I had him down. I was pinning him. It was it. It was over. And then I get disqualified. It's not my fault. The ref doesn't know how to stay the fuck out of the way when I come running with a clothesline.
It was the ref's fault.
Yeah, it's definitely not final in any sense of the way, any sense of the imagination. And that's, you know, just kind of par for the course there. Hey, referees, you know, they have a small space to work in, and sometimes they get in the way. It's kind of a big, challenging part of professional wrestling in general. And you had the Sheik on the ropes. I mean, his manager was getting involved. He was definitely – he was feeling it. You had the crowd behind you being sort of the hometown favorite, and you had him in a way that we don't usually see the Almighty Sheik. So you definitely had him on the ropes. This was not a one-sided affair. Look, you were out for blood. The man put a hole in your head. So you were definitely looking to get some revenge on that.
He actually put about four in my head that night. I had splits, especially after the chair shot. I had a split right down the center of my forehead.
Yeah,
there's a little bit of retribution to be. I thought I was pissed the last time, but now it's one of those things. Like, I'm so mad, I can't even really express it. So like I don't even really have any type of emotion towards it. I'm just going in with one thought in mind, and that's just to put him inside that body bag. Plain and simple.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see.
And if I have to put him through every wall, If I have to put him through every wall and chair in that building, I'm going to do it to make sure that he fits inside that body bag.
Yeah. As a promoter, I wonder how awkward it is for them to contact somebody and say, we need a body bag. That's up to the slant Jew ownership to take care of, but I can only imagine what, you know, that must be a strange request to make of someone.
I actually got told that the first funeral home they contacted asked if they were on drugs.
Nice.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Cause we're talking about independent wrestling.
Go ahead, Greg. Sorry.
I'm saying, you know, if the WWE requests body bags, I'm like, sure, production, whatever, here you go. But when any fed's looking for a body bag, I think people are gonna ask those questions. But, I'm sure by now they have one in place, and someone's going in it, whether these guys are fighting for 2 hours or what have you. Someone's going in that body bag, and it's not going to happen with just man-on-man. There's going to be some weapons involved, and it's going to be brutal, unlike anything that's ever been seen before in the state of Arizona. It's going to put any previous quote-unquote hardcore matches to shame, probably, and that's no knock on Gallo because he's been in those situations before, but he's torn it up completely. But this is a whole nother level.
Yeah, it is. And again, I can't wait for it to be over, I'm actually kind of excited because, like you said, I've done a lot out here. I don't know if I'm lucky enough to have been in a lot of these first-time matches, but, you know, I've done, like, a lot of crazy matches out here. You know, I did the first, like, in independent wrestling, as far as you go, you know, I did the first TLC with Dom. I did the tables match. I did, chain matches, strap matches. I've done, you know, quite a bit. And I'm curious to see how it's going to go.
Yeah, I think we all are. And I've been there for a lot of those matches and saw you. And look, they don't call you the King of No Rules for nothing. There's only really one rule in a body bag match, and that's in the bag and zip it up. So that's pretty much your element, and it's the Sheik's element too. And so if you're looking for something different, if you're looking for a product that, unlike any other here in the state of Arizona, and I don't mean any other right now, I mean any other really in history, then Slam U Pro on Thursday night is the place to be. And you know a thing or two about the promotion, Gallo. There's some VIP tickets that are available to people, and if they take advantage of the VIP ticket, what are they going to get associated with the VIP ticket for the event?
Well, there's the VIP ticket right now, and there's a lot of deals going on too. The venue is throwing a lot of deals out there, but the tickets for the VIP, you get a whole table. It's $25 a chair, I guess, for the table, and then if you buy two chairs, you get one free. You get in the half hour early. You get a meet and greet with the fan or with the wrestlers. And then there's going to be a couple pre-show matches, and then you also get a free autographed event poster for the show. Everybody that's in the VIP section gets that. The front row tickets also get in early and get to watch the pre-show and everything else. And those tickets are 2-for-1 right now on a link on the Facebook somewhere, I believe. And then after all that's said and done, the general admission get let in, and about 15 minutes after general admission opens up, the rest of the main show will start. And girls are free for general admission as well. There's a lot of deals going on. I know at Gotham City Comics right now, they're actually doing a 2-for-1 on tickets for the general admission too. So right now the idea is just to build up as many new fans as we can get. We like the fact that there was new fans there last time. We want to keep getting more new fans. We want to keep building and showing that there actually is a viable wrestling scene out here in Arizona with a lot of good talent besides, WWE every time it comes to town. And we want to, because you know, Greg, that there's been a lot of slash and burn operations running around throughout the last couple of years. And we're trying to change that. The owners and all the wrestlers on the roster are really trying to reverse that. We want to give the crowd a good show. We want to give them something they can talk about and tell their friends and come back and have a good time and know that this is their local promotion. This is theirs. This show is for them, the fans, to have a good time and displace reality for a few hours.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's professional wrestling at its finest. I mean, it does harken back to the days of ECW, but it doesn't stop there. It really takes that up to the next level. And so, you know, it's all over. If you just go to facebook.com/slamuwrestling, you'll see the deals. You'll see the information. You'll see some videos. You get to see what the Sheik said about Gallo. You get to see what Gallo said about the Sheik. There's an awesome preview video up there as well. I mean, just a ton of stuff. Information about the band, versions of you. I mean, there's just a ton of great things going on. It's an experience, but wrestling really is the pinnacle part of that experience, and it should be just a blast for everyone to take advantage of. So Gallo, I definitely, you know, wish you luck. I know it's odd wishing you luck sometimes, but, you know, I'm going to be there. I look forward to seeing what happens, and, you know, I'll be pulling for you to come out on top, and that's strong words considering the Sheik's been good to us on this program, but, You know, he doesn't go back to 6 years like you do.
Yeah,
so.
I was gonna say you've known me longer. You got to go for me.
I definitely do, and I am obligated, but it's an obligation that I'm more than happy to oblige to. So come out of this one on top and as healthy as possible. I'm sure you're gonna give me some more cringeworthy moments as you always have. And I look forward to seeing what happens. And then we will schedule something possibly for October where we can actually detail the 13-year career that you've had and let our listeners see that. I've got some dates open in October, and we should really give you the full-blown treatment because I think some people would be amazed at the stories you have and the experiences that you've had. So we're definitely going to set that up here probably late October before whatever the October Slam U Pro show is because – you know, regardless of what happens in the body bag match, I know you'll be back in action no matter what.
Sounds good to me, Greg. Thanks for having me again.
No problem. Anytime, and we'll do it again soon.
Sounds good, brother. Good talking to you.
There you go. Gabriel Gallo, again, Arizona Event Center, azeventcenter.com, and, of course, head on over to Facebook. Facebook.com/SlamUWrestling, SlamUPro on the Twitter too. Patrick Goodell. So see, thanks to the lack of a guest, we're actually on time.
Nice.
We're actually ahead of time. We're actually ahead of time.
I know.
That's right. Chad Perry sent me a message. You know, Oddsmakers is taking over the world. Chad Perry sends me a message, and he's like, looking at the rundown, I give it, I think he said 15% that he would actually be on the show on time. And I look, admittedly, I gave it 35. Like, I wasn't, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, nobody,
wasn't going
it's always long odds.
It was always long odds. But sometimes those odds are met, Patrick.
Oh, shucky, ducky, quack, quack.
So what do you say we bring Chad Perry on the program and have some fun?
Let's do it.
All right, let me find that. There's the theme song.
Let's go!
Chad Perry.
100% reason to remember the name.
That is the music for the man, Chad Perry, at CPGoat on the Twitter. Might as well promote at Wrestling Realist. Drop the I in wrestling. And at Greg DeMarco Show on the Twitter. Of course, at PW Powerhouse as well for the site. And at Real Sue Young. She's not on here anymore, but at Real Sue Young as well. So, Chad, we got you ahead of schedule today.
I'm just amazed so much, Greg.
Well, that's what happens when a guest doesn't show up. So, you know, I mean,
yeah.
You know, we'll be honest. Let's, you know, hey, but I'll take it.
Here.
I'll take it any way I can get it. So that's just kind of the way it goes sometimes, which is good because Chad Perry this week has a brand new game for us. Patrick O'Dowd should be able to stick around for that entire game as well and just have a lot of fun. So Tony Acero has officially said that he will be on the program tonight. His ring announcing duties will actually – and not only that, he apparently eliminated somebody from a battle royal.
Wow.
Yeah, which I believe Tara Calloway sent me a video of. And she was accompanying someone ringside for that battle royal. So we will see what happens there and have a chance to ask Tony Acero about that. Heather Lynn also going to be on too. So the full cast of the Midnight Wrestling Review will be in effect tonight. But Chad, tell us about the new game.
All right. We previewed it a little bit last week. We had one sample question. It is called Timeline. And basically, if you're not with us last week, or if you forgot, we're each going to take a turn discussing one or two or three events that are pretty much most likely to happen at some point at some time. And we're going to put them in an order of how they will happen. Maybe throw on a time stamp, you know, a loose time stamp. It doesn't have to be a June 13th at 5 p.m., but we'll try to get a little specific. So to start out, we're going to talk about three of the best big men in the WWF, WWE since the 1990s. And the question is going to be, who will wrestle their final WWE match last? The Big Show, The Undertaker, or Kane? Patrick?
I'm gonna have to say, I think I'll do the order first and then sort of the timeline that I see. I don't think that any of them are too much longer for this career, though I would say looking at the three of them, I would say The Undertaker is probably the one I would have go first. Now, if there were a perfect time for The Undertaker to sort of walk into the sunset, ending at WrestleMania 30 seems like it would make the most sense to me. So I think that he would go first. You know, Kane's been saying he's on his way out the door for a while, but yet he keeps hanging around and he keeps getting used quite prominently and being used to put some people over now. So he's paying it forward. But I do see him maybe going after The Undertaker anywhere from, like, say, 6 months to a year. And then the Big Show, I've not as well researched with him, so I may have missed something or some speculation as to where he is in his career, but I could see him, you know, still sticking around for quite a bit longer. He's always seems to have a place for the E and or in the E, and he's always again, he's another guy that they tend to use a lot to sort of push some things and move some things along. It looks like he's primed for a tag title run. So I'm not necessarily positive that he's going to be going anytime in the near year. I would say maybe within 2 years at the earliest.
All right. What says you, Greg?
It's funny, you know, when I look at it, and I guess I'll try to take a different route with it. With the question being who will wrestle their final match is going to be last, I actually believe that of the three, the person who will have the last match will be Kane. I think that Kane, the way his career has gone, we always, you know, use the term company guy. We talk about some people. I don't know if there's a more company guy than Kane. Kane has done everything WWE's ever asked of him, whether it's comedic, whether it's serious, whether it's demonic. He's starring in his second movie with the company. He's invested well in his personal life. He's definitely, you know, gained some notoriety on a political stage as well as a financial stage, and he takes a lot of breaks, and all three of these guys take a lot of breaks, and I think that really has extended their careers. The Undertaker is kind of on a one or two match per year schedule right now, and the Big Show is pretty much works kind of about, you know, 6 to 8 months a year right now with the schedule that he has. And he's had some knee injuries as well. And I think of the three, Kane's probably in the best shape. And that's not saying that he is in the best shape overall. So for me, I think The Undertaker is going to be the first one to go. I think WrestleMania 30 would be the way to go out. I still kind of wonder if we might see him lose to John Cena at WrestleMania 30. We'll save that discussion for later. At that point, I just think that then it's a horse race. And I actually think that the Big Show is probably going to just have to call it quits because of injuries and because of the wear and tear on his body first. And then I think that'll eventually catch up to Kane. Hell of a career for all three guys, but I do think Undertaker first, then the Big Show. Finally, the last man standing, so to speak, will be Kane.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. Greg, last statement there. Hell of a career for all three. When it comes to big men, we've definitely seen a lot of big men come and go, especially in the early 90s, facing The Undertaker. That goes, you know, right up through most recently Great Khali, and a lot of the big men sucked. And, you know, the Giant, when he started in WCW, pushing Hulk Hogan off of buildings inside of a monster truck was certainly not anywhere near the worker we saw him evolve to be. I got to say that I think Taker has two more manias in him, I'm going to go with. I know it seems to make sense for him to end it this year, but I think that, you know, with the schedule he's working, he can definitely afford to do a couple extra. So I'm going to give Taker two more years. That puts us into, let's see, April of 2014. You know, Kane is interesting because I remember in 2006 we heard rumors of Kane leaving. And here it is 7 years later, and Kane is still going strong. He's a very prominent on-air character, likely to be coming back as a heel again. And from what I've heard, he's off filming a movie right now. So, I mean, Kane definitely got something going for him. He's very strong into politics, the right side of politics. I'm going to go with Kane, you know, leaving a little bit after Taker in a much more quiet way. And possibly just popping up for another match. Taker can't pop up for any more matches. Once he leaves, he's going to get the Hall of Fame induction like Blair, like Shawn, and he's going to be gone. So end of 2015, I'll go with Kane. Big Show, I'm pretty sure he is a little bit younger than both men. I mean, he definitely has had less in-ring experience. And again, Big Show, it looks like he was going to retire in 2006 after his ECW title run. He came back 2 years later and has been going strong since. So I'm going to give Big Show, I'm going to put Big Show right along with Kane. I'm going to say that Kane will be the one with the last WWE match, though.
There we go. All There's right. really no way to an average or anything. Is it numbers based?
No, yeah. I was trying to sum it up, but I mean, I guess if everyone is listening, you guys are going to have to sum it up in your own heads. We are all, you know, we all had our opinion, and I have a short-term memory, so I also forgot everyone's opinion was, so I'll have to go back and listen again later.
We'll say, you are correct in terms of age. Undertaker is currently 48, Kane is currently 46, Big Show is 41. So you are correct in terms of age.
So, I mean, if we go off of Taker, too, if we make him the bar, that could mean that Big Show has at least seven more years than him.
Yeah, I don't think he does. I just don't.
I don't think he does either. But
he supposedly has the same condition that Andre the Giant had. I don't know if that's true or not. That's just, you know, again, supposedly. So who knows? Who knows? It's interesting. Interesting in general.
Was he drinking too much? Oh, sorry.
Different condition. Different condition.
Oh, okay, my bad.
Yes, definitely. Definitely different. Different than that one.
All right. So next up, we'll stick with WWE theme. Who will wrestle in a WWE ring first/next? Because one of these men has already wrestled. But take the context of the question that you want. AJ Styles or Batista? Greg.
That's a good one. When I saw this question on the rundown, I was quite excited about it because that is a great question. And we have a better timeline on AJ Styles than we do Batista right now. AJ Styles, of course, as we talked about earlier in the show, TNA contract runs out in September. He floated out on Facebook, like, where should I go? He listed WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, Japan. He listed everything. He could just be trying to stir the pot. He could just be trying to put TNA in a position where they got to ante up. Who the hell knows? I have no faith in TNA at this point. What I do have faith in is Batista is pretty steadfast. He's got the movie career going on. He's filming movies. And I do think we see Batista in a WWE ring. But I'm going to put I'm going to put myself out there, and I'm going to say that I actually think we see AJ Styles in a WWE ring first. And I think it happens, if they were smart, it would happen in the Royal Rumble. But with September, maybe take some time off. Yeah, I'll say or early 2014 in time for a mid-card match at WrestleMania. I'm not claiming the guy's going to main event WrestleMania at all. Hell, he might even be on the pre-show. Who knows? But Batista, I don't see him coming back. You know, he could be a good post-WrestleMania surprise at the earliest. So I could see both guys in 2014, but I think AJ comes first. Batista could take even longer. He's just got a lot more going on than AJ Styles does. So AJ first, Batista second.
All
right.
Yeah, this is a really... you know, and this is one of those things where it really does come down to this contract negotiation. And I think that's what's really tough. Because for as poorly run as TNA, in my opinion, has been, I can't imagine that they've been so poorly run that they wouldn't, you know, pay for AJ. But here we are. Here we are. Latest report is that we're fighting. We're talking over money, and that negotiations are set to resume apparently come this week, and that there's no deal in sight. Which, you know, I think that this could be it. I think this could be the end of AJ and TNA. Like Greg said, I think Batista's got a pretty good thing going. You know, it'll be interesting to see how his first real movie roles start to pan out. I mean, he's done bit roles here and there where he's sort of been the muscle, and not really like a super significant character in a movie. Where he's got this Guardians of the Galaxy movie that he's coming out, he's got a pretty important role. Like he's a fairly solid member of the core in that superhero team. So I'll be interested to see if that helps him take off the way that The Rock took off and some others did. And if that's the case, I could see it being a bit longer. So I'm gonna go with Greg too. I'm gonna say that, you know, right now it's not looking good in terms of contract negotiations. And I don't know that they sign AJ, and if they do, I don't even know that they're going to sign him all that long term to where he doesn't, you know, still leave, maybe just not this year, maybe it's the end of next year or something before Batista comes back to the WWE.
Yeah, that AJ Styles question is going to be so telling about TNA in general, like we talked about before.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm really interested in it for a multitude of reasons, because I'm a huge fan of AJ Styles. I think he's one of the best. Go back and watch. If you go back and watch the matches he had in Ring of Honor, like, he did some things that you've never seen when he was wrestling in Ring of Honor. Power moves. Like, he is really one of the most complete professional wrestlers that I've ever had the opportunity to watch. And it's just an amazing set of talents that he has. Just an amazing guy to watch and an amazing guy to follow along with. And so I would just love to see what he could do on that stage. And think of the dream matches that we could get out of AJ Styles in the WWE. I mean, you know, AJ versus Daniel Bryan has happened. It happened in Ring of Honor, but we're talking about a much bigger stage and guys at a different spot in their career. Same thing with CM Punk. They've wrestled before, but not at that level. And then look at the other guys he hasn't faced, like Dolph Ziggler. Could you imagine AJ Styles and Dolph Ziggler in the same match? Like,
oh my
that would
God,
just
yeah.
be insane. So it's really... really a lot that they can definitely take care of and can definitely do. So I would just love to see AJ Styles in WWE. And Patrick Goddard, is that then hopeful, Greg DeMarco coming out yet again? Is that...
hopeful, Greg DeMarco. I think that there's a little more to this, though. I think that, again, like, you're looking at this and you're looking at... It's little things that let you know that things aren't going so well. For example... You know, I think that you know you're in bad shape at least from a PR standpoint, if not elsewhere, when you have to make a big show of signing TJ Perkins. Like that's like when you have to put that out there for people to see for a couple of reasons. One, because it's an attempt to make you look good, which it doesn't help, Dixie. I'm sorry, it just doesn't.
No.
But making that sound like it's a big deal, and then you can't sign AJ Styles. The fact that they're saying that, you know, Hulk Hogan isn't making appearances because he's too expensive to bring on regularly now, like we're in trouble here. Like that's I really believe it.
Yeah, definitely have to agree with that one. That's
gonna be something that we're gonna discuss a little bit later on. When it comes to AJ. I'm very torn on this one because a part of me wants to say that this is a negotiating ploy and there's really no intent by AJ to not resign and he's just trying to get more money. The thing is, I then reality check with myself
remind myself that, as we were just discussing, there is no more money in TNA. So, Batista, like you guys said, he has a pretty big role coming up in the movie. And obviously, that welcomes a return. WWE will with open arms, Batista return, and, you know, but it probably will just be for a little cameo. AJ Styles, I'm going to say we see AJ Styles on WWE TV in a match by March of next year. I'm not saying I'm booking for Mania. You know, it's obviously a time lapse. I can't imagine they would think about sending AJ to NXT. That just does not make any sense to me. Yeah, I'm going to go with AJ there. Batista, you know, I could see him next summer maybe wrestling a match, but I still wouldn't put it too high. As great as Batista was at the end of his run, I think that's what we're going to have to go off with remembering Batista. If there was an option on here, which I guess there could be because I make up the games, if there was an option that said not available, that's what I go with for Batista. I don't agree to see Batista wrestle another match. All right, Patrick, you ready for the next one?
Yeah, just roll right into it, man.
All right, man. So, as we just discussed with TNA, we're just going to transition right into it. This is a fun one, a little cross-branding. Vince McMahon will fully retire from his daily duties with WWE. That does not mean Triple H relieves him on TV. It means that he is fully done. He is most likely dead, honestly. Or TNA closes their doors for the last time. Patrick, what do you think is going to happen first?
I when I saw this question, not that I got excited about it like the way Greg did with the AJ Styles or Batista one, but I did really think about this one a lot more than I really thought I would. They're setting up transition for Triple H to take over. For Vince McMahon, both in front of the camera and from behind it, behind the scenes. However, I really think that the company fully turns over from Vince McMahon when they find his corpse hunched over his desk. I don't think he goes away. I don't think he fully retires. I don't think he's going to be, like, he doesn't strike me as that guy, no matter how many times you hear him say it or say what he thinks he wants to have happen. I think he is like the Queen of England. He is dying, and you know, God forbid anybody take his precious country, or in this case company, completely over until he's gone from this earth. And he strikes me as the type that not only will not completely hand over the reins, but that he's going to like live forever. He's going to be like 99, you know.
He's going to be Mae Young.
Yeah, he's going to be like Mae Young old and before he kicks it. And because of that, and because of my opinion of TNA, which I, you know, have evolved on over the past month to where I really do feel like it's starting to feel like a sinking ship, I think TNA closes its doors first. Now, I'm not going to give a timeline, because the thing about TNA is it has been slowly dying for the last two years or so, 2 years plus, even longer than that in some people's opinion. And they're, you know, I think now the hemorrhaging is just getting too far out of control. So I won't, you know, I won't say that it's coming like tomorrow, but I also don't think it's that far away. I say TNA first. I'm not going to give you the satisfaction of a date, but Vince McMahon is never dying, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with TNA is they were closing their doors after week 12.
Yep.
Back in 2002, they were closing the doors because they didn't have the financial backing. So, you know, as much shit as I like to give TNA, and I know Greg does as well, and, you know, you're starting to, like, we all see what's wrong with the company right now.
As much as
we can from the outside. I don't want to make it sound too smarky. But TNA has survived a hell of a lot. They are like Mae Young. They just keep ticking too. But, you know, they're Mae Young, and Vince McMahon is a fabulous moolah. And moolah was definitely, you know, obviously the bigger star. And, you know, Mae Young was just kind of the sidekick that became a strong character and birthed hands in the early 2000s. And that's what TNA does. They birth hands. They don't birth full thoughts. And that's what's going to kill them sooner than Vince McMahon. Because like Patrick said, Vince isn't going to leave. He'll still be involved, even if Triple H is fully in charge of the company. Stephanie's right there with him. Vince is still going to have some hand in it until he dies. And he's only, I want to say, late 60s right now. The man's got at least another 20 years. There's no way TNA has another 20 years. I will give a time frame for TNA. I will say within 2 to 5 years. I think we will slowly see things just dissipate more, and it'll be like in a WCW where you see guys like AJ and Rude, maybe Storm, they're going to start jumping ship. And it's going to suck. It really is. It's going to be 2001, 2002 all over again when Vince has the monopoly. And the only hope is that with Triple H, he'll be able to make it not feel like a monopoly and make things feel fresh. Greg, what are your opinions on that?
You know, it's funny with the whole Vince McMahon thing, and I think what we're seeing right now with this, I think we're seeing the passing of the torch to Triple H from an on-camera perspective, but the key here is that, and we've seen Vince go off-screen for several years before, and he could do it again, but the question states fully retire, and that's never happening. Triple H himself has said it, like when Vince ain't leaving until he kicks. Like Vince is not. I just can't see Vince McMahon like old and like a vegetable. Like I don't think he goes that way. I know it's morbid to even talk about how a guy's gonna go, but I don't see him, you know, in the wheelchair getting that kind of treatment. Like, you know, I just don't see him going that way. Because we only see him as Vince McMahon, and in, you know, the interview that Triple H does with Grant Lane, if you haven't seen it, check it out. It's amazing. The way he talks about Vince and what's really important to Vince and what Vince would do all day, every day if he could, and it's worried about the business side of things. It's almost like the business, this multimedia conglomerate, just sort of happened because the opportunities were there. TNA, like yes, they've been near death before. And you know, like Chad said, after week 12, they were almost gone. But this just, I feel like we're doing short-term measures to just delay the inevitable. Like you know, like they're on life support, and look, we can pull the plug now, or we can pull the plug, or you can just die on your own in 2 years. Like there's just so many different, you know, scenarios. But all the scenarios that I see seem to end with TNA shutting down. I just think, you know, because they're one, you know, pissed off Spike TV executive away from going out of business. Right now, as it is, like say Spike says, "Screw this, we're out." Like then TNA's done. I mean, WCW couldn't live without, you know, Turner. Once they got canceled off their product or their stations, they were gone. And Spike, you know, TNA is kind of the same way. I just don't see them. You know, they just haven't built up enough of a mainstream recognition to survive without Spike TV. And Vince McMahon, like you guys said, he could easily have another 20 years left, even if it's a severely limited role. Even if Vince only had 10 years left, I think he outlives TNA. I can't see TNA celebrating 20 years in business. I just don't see that happening for them. In terms of a timeline for TNA's death, I just, knowing that Hogan's contract is up soon, just the way TV works, the way the world of MMA works, and that does have an influence because of Viacom's ownership of Bellator and their ownership of Spike TV, I would say TNA is going to be done by the end of 2015. That's kind of my prediction. That's still 2.5 years away. A lot happened between now and then, but that's sort of my prediction for TNA. And let's be honest, to go back to what the AJ Styles question, if TNA had a last match, that last match would be AJ Styles versus Jeff Jarrett. I don't know if that would ever happen, because by then AJ will probably be the WWE, but that's what I would see if TNA ever had a last match. Vince McMahon, I can't put a date, a year, anything on when he's going to be done. I just think it's not, you know, it's not infinity, but it's definitely beyond what I see for TNA. So, you know, TNA is going to close their doors forever before Vince McMahon fully retires from the headship of the WWE.
Absolutely. So we're all very much in unanimous agreement on that one, all across the board. So let's move on to some happier subjects now. Who will be inducted into the Hall of Fame first? The Ultimate Warrior or Randy Savage? Go ahead, Greg.
You know, it's funny because, you know, 2 weeks ago, I think my answer would have been different. But with the recent dialogue between the WWE and the Ultimate Warrior and the things that he said, and you know, if the rumors of what happened between, you know, Randy Savage and members of the McMahon family are true, then I think they'll still get in the way. I think both guys get in, and they could even get in the same year. And then it'd be really tricky because then it's like, well, who actually gets inducted first, which means who's the bigger name in the induction ceremony if they go in the same year. Assuming they don't go in the same year, who knows? Even if they do, I think they would treat Savage as a bigger deal. So I'm going to say the Ultimate Warrior is actually going to get into the Hall of Fame first. I do think both guys go in. I could see the Ultimate Warrior going in at WrestleMania 30 or 31 very easily. Savage, I could see, you know, 30, 31, maybe 32. So I think they're going to be close. And if they happen to be in the same year, I still think Savage is considered the bigger name and goes in later in the ceremony. So Ultimate Warrior is going to go in first. I think they go in within a year of each other at the, you know, at best. They could potentially go in the same year.
Here's the one thing that everybody seems to forget with Randy Savage, and that is that there is somebody who has a stranglehold over his legacy, and that would be his brother. And every time that this discussion comes up, and for me, it's without a doubt, the Ultimate Warrior is getting into the Hall of Fame before Randy Savage. And I agree with Greg. I think that Randy Savage will eventually get into the WWE Hall of Fame, even though he should have been inducted a very, very long time ago. The thing about Savage is, you know, a lot of people go to the family history. I don't think that's what it is. I think that if wrestling has proven anything time and time again, it's that just about anything can be forgiven and forgotten and move forward. Bruno Sammartino is now a member of the WWE Hall of Fame. And that was, to me, sort of the last true obstacle of what would be, you know, somebody never going in because they didn't want to go in.
But Patrick, he didn't screw an underage Stephanie.
True. But I mean, I'm telling you, if that even happened, and you know, the other thing with this is, again, like it's been stated, and I think it's probably been pretty accurate that the WWE has sent feelers out to his family, and when you've got, you know, the genius himself sitting there being like, not unless you bring my whole family in. Like that's the roadblock, and until that guy changes, and he doesn't seem to be in any hurry to do it, Randy Savage sits on the outside, in you know, for whatever it's worth, as an injustice to the WWE's Hall of Fame, and makes it an incomplete Hall of Fame.
Sorry, and you know, after hearing you guys give your points, I think I should have actually substituted Warrior for a certain Canadian fellow. Not Chris Benoit, but Owen Hart. Who,
Owen.
Yeah, Owen Hart. Because I think this, that would have been a more dynamic question because Owen and Randy definitely have very similar situations. Warrior recently, of course, you know, the video game deal, as silly as it sounds, Warrior being featured in an upcoming video game is a big step for WWE. And it definitely, to me, I'm going to say Ultimate Warrior is headlining the WrestleMania 30 Hall of Fame, if it's not being headlined by Triple H. And, I mean, another person could be Vince McMahon, but that's a whole other discussion. So as far as who goes in first, Savage, it's amazing that the Hall of Fame has been going strong for 10 years now. Of course, there were three other incarnations back in the mid-90s. But it's been going strong for 10 years now. And Sam, it's amazing both these guys still aren't in there. But obviously, there were big roadblocks. And if, in fact, those things are true with Randy Savage, the fact that, you know, a man who is having adult sexual pleasure with Stephanie nowadays is probably going to have a hard time looking past that. But that's all about how much you want to take those stories for. Personally, I don't take them with any more than a grain of salt. So obviously I'm saying Warrior's going in first, WrestleMania 30. I'm going to give Savage a few more years, probably the next time they return to Florida, which I'm going to say WrestleMania 33. Next up, Darren Young wins a WWE title, or Sami Zayn debuts on the main roster.
Who's going? I didn't catch it.
Oh, go ahead, Patrick.
Okay. this is another tricky one in the sense that you just said that Sami Zayn has to debut on the main roster. I will say that it's tricky because right now I don't know which title Darren Young would win. Had you asked me a month ago, had Darren Young, you know, come out staged or otherwise, 2 months ago, you're probably looking at they already have, you know, that they're seriously challenging the Shield for the WWE tag titles, but now we've got this new sort of super faction of Mark Henry and the Big Show that have declared they're going after the Shield. I don't know that that leaves a lot of room for a tag title run for Darren Young and the primetime players. Who's the Intercontinental Champion right now?
Curtis Axel.
Oh, that's right, Curtis Axel. I don't know that belt's going anywhere right away. There seems to be an intent to keep Curtis Axel, the Project Axel, running, which leads us to the U.S. title, which is a pretty big deal, but it is a possibility, I suppose. I don't know how far Sami Zayn is from debuting. I don't necessarily watch NXT enough to make a fair assessment on that. But I do know that the reality is that just because we think somebody's ready to debut on the main roster doesn't mean that they are. Darren Young's already starting to get on a hot streak. So I'm going to say Darren Young is going to win. We'll say that he's going to somehow pull off a win over Dean Ambrose in some way and take the U.S. title away. Oh, I did it. Yep. What you gonna do?
Oh.
And then Sami Zayn debuts later. That's right. I did it.
We went back to the Attitude Era with a tag team guy winning a singles belt. That's
bold,
amazing.
Bold prediction.
Yeah. No kidding.
It makes me sad inside. I died a little bit.
Why? What's your problem with Darren Young? Why do you hate gay people?
I'll get to my rant. I'll let Greg go first.
Your rant.
It's funny because for me, knowing, you know, they've said before publicly that no one's coming on television in the WWE until there's a story, until they have a reason to bring them on television, and I just don't know that's going to happen with Sami Zayn sometime in 2013. He seems like a guy who could debut at the Royal Rumble. He seems like a guy who could debut after WrestleMania 30. So I just don't see that happening. In ring, I think he can pull it off, but I don't know about outside of the ring. Darren Young's on the main roster. Darren Young is there. He's ready to go. And I think the primetime players are going to win the tag team championships before the end of 2013. So for me, it's kind of a no-brainer. In fact, I could even go, Darren Young, hands down, will win a WWE title before Sami Zayn debuts on the main roster. I think Darren Young wins a belt, a tag team title, sometime during 2013. I think Sami Zayn debuts on the main roster in 2014. Hands down.
Hands down. I think hands down, Greg DeMarco is spot on. I fully agree with that order. And everyone who was listening last week, we discussed Darren Young coming out. And you can go back and listen to that in the archives, of course, and on iTunes. But as much as I support Darren Young coming out, I'm not a huge fan of basically giving the guy the push because he came out of the closet, which is absolutely what they're doing. No one's going to argue with me. No one's going to deny that. And it's just a little ludicrous that, you know, Darren Young definitely has had a little bit of talent. I feel Titus O'Neil is the better member of that tag team. But just to see D. Young get the push just because of this is, I don't know, it's a little silly to me, and especially since they're not acknowledging it on TV, which is the right decision to do. It shouldn't be acknowledged on TV. But there's no way. I mean, this week we've already seen them show up. They had a babyface turn, and he pinned Cesaro twice. Now, obviously, Cesaro's not exactly top-tier talent, but he did hold a title for quite a while, not that long. I believe heading into this year, he was still U.S. champion or Intercontinental champion. With that being said, he's winning a belt. I'm going to tag belt. I can't see him taking the U.S. belt. If he did, it would be, you know, an R-Truth U.S. title reign where it lasts all about 6 days and then Ambrose wins it back to pay-per-view probably. And that'd be okay. But either way, D. Young's winning a belt. Sami Zayn, we'll see him post-WrestleMania. You know, after watching his match with Cesaro, he definitely looks ready in my eyes. But, you know, I don't run a billion-dollar company, so my opinion doesn't really matter that much.
The one thing I want to say is that, yes, Darren Young and the Primetime Players are getting this renewed push because Darren Young is gay. The question I have is did they not already deserve the push before he came out as being gay?
Yes, they did. But the only reason they're being acknowledged for it is because that Vince and the rest of the office recognizes the publicity they can get off of it. Yes, I totally agree that they deserve the push. I've been a proponent for the Primetime Players for some time, and they're most of the tag division. But I'm not a big fan of guys getting pushed. Just it's sending the wrong message, in my opinion. You are pushing a guy. It's just the same as pushing a guy because he's pushing a guy because he's homosexual. You're pushing him because he is. And it'll be interesting to see how long they can keep it up. Because maybe we're getting too far ahead of ourselves, Greg, with saying that he'll win a title. And in a month, this could be a total afterthought. Because, again, they're not mentioning it on TV. So it's something that can fall to the wayside fairly easily and just kind of get swept into the rug. And they can just keep him on the roster for 10 years and say, hey, we had this guy and everyone wins. But
I guess for me, it's like I don't care why they get the push. I guess people have been pushed for worse reasons, for dumber reasons. I'm glad they're getting the push. I think it's a mistake to not acknowledge it. I don't think they should make it part of a story, but I think there's no reason acknowledging it, just like they acknowledge other people's accomplishments. And I know being gay is not an accomplishment. However, being out publicly as the first active professional athlete, if you want to stretch what wrestling is, because they are athletes, it is a big deal, and it does go a long way in the world of public acceptance. It gets them a push, and that's what's important to me. It doesn't matter to me why they're getting the push. Patrick O'Dowd, what about you in terms of the why behind the push?
I don't really, again, the why, it doesn't bother me too much. I think that, yes, I think in a perfect world, in a perfect wrestling company, then every wrestler that gets pushed, that deserves to get pushed, would be based on their merits and their work they're done in the ring. We all know that's not true. Who your father is or was can get you a big push. Who you know before you came in can get you a big push. There's, you know, who you politic. Like, there's a lot of different things that can lead to a big push. You know, there are worse reasons, as Greg said, that Darren Young could be getting a push right now, and that by extension that means Titus O'Neil is as well. So I'm actually quite okay with it.
Yeah. The Rock got a push because of who his dad was.
Absolutely.
Randy Orton because of who his family is. And look at those guys now. It took Orton a while. Don't get me wrong. I was not on the Orton bandwagon early on, as Patrick O'Dowd knows. And he jumped on the Orton bandwagon before I did. He was smarter than I was. Now I am. I think Orton's very talented and underappreciated by the WWE fans. But yeah, could be worse reasons for getting a push. But I understand where Chad's coming from. He wanted to see him get pushed for merit and not for somebody coming out of the closet. But that adds the marketability. And you know, again, I go back to that Triple H interview where he talked about, you know, marketing is something that they have to bring in, you know, when determining an idea to use, they have to talk to the marketing department. Can we market this? Like that's – and honestly, they can now market Darren Young differently than they could have before, whether they choose to do it or not, or just because now he's got a new fan base who's probably going to tune in and see him that didn't before, kind of just like the Total Divas fan base. You know, it's there.
Ah, Greg, you made the Total Divas reference this week. I didn't even get to it yet.
I did. It was, in fact, topical. So let's put this conversation on hold real quick. I know Chad has a bonus question, and so I'll take him off mute momentarily. Patrick O'Dowd, much like Sue Young an hour ago, this is now where you get off.
Yep, this is my stop.
This is his last stop because he's tired. Do you have a quick hits in order, Patrick O'Dowd? Do you have a quick hit?
Yeah, sure. To all my friends out there,
bang, 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 bang. Try and stop it. Bang, bang. Here I come. Bang.
Quick hits.
Bang.
You haven't played the soundbite in so long. I didn't know it was coming.
We haven't officially done it in so long.
True. To all my friends out there who have HBO, and I've jumped on this train a lot. There was an episode of Real Sports with Brian Gumbel this past week that did a nice little segment on Diamond Dallas Page and DDP Yoga, and focusing on more in particular Jake Roberts than Scott Hall, but both of them were covered quite well. And I still think this is something that people should pay attention to and that DDP should be applauded for. As I really do think that the guy's doing a lot of good and that, you know, yes, he's making his living off of it. But again, every time we talk about this, it's been positive, and I fully support it.
There you go. That's right. Check it out. Patrick O'Dowd, we will not see you next week.
Nope, you will not.
We will not see you next week. He's not been fired. He just has to work. And there's nothing wrong with that. So
yep.
We will see you in 2 weeks
bill.
Then. It does pay
you
the bills.
You will. See you later, bro.
We all have to do. There we go. And Patrick O'Dowd, he's tired.
If you could be so kind as to just, you know, tuck Patrick O'Dowd in and wish him a good night.
Patrick, is someone tuckered out? Oh, sleepy. You gotta go to bed. Huh? I feel weird.
I was like, am I a puppy?
I feel as more she was taunting you. And then she was,
yeah, I was like, oh, it's a little boy, gotta go to bed. Okay.
He's so cranky. He just gotta go take a nap.
Shut up! All right, that's enough of that. So let's bring Chad Perry back on. Chad, welcome back. For your 2 minute long break there. Yeah, you know, Patrick O'Dowd had to go to bed. You know,
That's right.
He's tired. He's got to work tomorrow. He does have to be up early in the morning, so he's getting less sleep than normal. And if you don't know him like I know him, he needs his sleep. So he'll be cranky old man in the morning. So.
All right. So, Greg, you want to hear the bonus question?
Of course.
All right. We're going to say, which one's going to happen first here? RVD is going to get busted for a wellness violation, or Dolph Ziggler wins the big one. Not the world title, not the third biggest title in WWE, the first biggest title, the WWE title.
Wow. The WWE champion. That's hard. And it's sad that it's hard, because what does it say about Rob Van Dam? Rob Van Dam is such a proponent of the use of marijuana. I mean, to one of the biggest supporters out there for the legalization of marijuana, that, and he, you know, I think he's okay financially. I honestly think he could laugh in the face. I mean, I could blow smoke in the face of the threat of a wellness policy violation. You like that?
Yes, I did. Nice.
And I just – Ziggler worries me. And here's the thing that worries me about Dolph Ziggler. And it doesn't worry me. It worries me about the internet wrestling community. I think they're going to have a hard time accepting that Dolph Ziggler and even Daniel Bryan are destined to retire as Mr. Perfect, as Rick Rude, as Ricky Steamboat, like never having been the guy. Because Daniel Bryan's opportunity is amazing, but it's not a multi-year thing that we're looking at here. I think it's a short term. I think it ends come, you know, by WrestleMania at the latest. He'll still be prominently featured, but we're not talking about the guy, the face of the company. Still a better run than Ziggler may have. I just don't know if we're going to see Dolph Ziggler wearing the WWE Championship. Now, he could still have some more longevity. I mean, we could see Dolph Ziggler wearing the WWE Championship 3 years from now. Who knows? But again, he doesn't ever have to never have to wear it for this question to apply. But RVD has to not get that wellness policy violation. So I'm going to say it happens to Rob Van Dam first. I think both are probably going to happen. I think it happened to RVD first.
Yeah, it's you definitely made all the points that I was thinking right there. Ziggler is so young that, you know, if he sticks around for a while, there's no reason in 5 years even we can't be talking about, you know, him actually finally winning the big ones. If we look at this in terms, I like to compare Ziggler to Jericho. And if we look at Jericho's mainstream career, it really started in WCW in about 96. Didn't win the title for 5 years after that, win the big one in WWE. Ziggler, you know.
And that first run was not impressive. Let's remember, Jericho's first run, not impressive.
Jericho's first run, yeah, exactly.
I mean,
not
being,
a title
when,
reign.
Being
but,
first, yeah. The guy to unify the belts, impressive.
At WrestleMania has never been a bigger hindrance than it was to Jericho that year.
Except for Randy Orton at 25. Both guys against Triple H, by the way.
Yeah, interesting. And, yeah, so Jericho's run, very rough. Of course, that was him winning the big one at the time. He did win the world title first and then unified them, as Jericho reminded us. But then he plodded around in the mid-card basically until he got ready to leave in 2006 when he feuded with Cena on his way out. And then he came back in 2008 is when he won the next one. And he was friggin' brilliant. So if we look at that, it's a 12-year span before Jericho really broke out. And you can even add more of that to Jericho, really, because Jericho is going strong in Mexico. So Ziggler has so much time left that he can do it. And it could definitely be one of those things where they're in a pinch and they need a guy, kind of similar to Great Khali's title reign a few years ago. RVD, like you said, I mean, he's a big proponent and a power to him. He's in a state that's legalized, so he can do what he wants. You know, it's interesting to see him getting pushed right now. And I stated a few months ago when we talked about his chances of winning a title, I gave it zero because I don't think WWE wants to put a title on him for the fear. And I know that the wellness violation, I know that if Randy Orton gets busted for another one, he's automatically fired. I don't know how it works for RVD since he severed ties with the company in between when his last wellness violation was. I don't know what his next penalty would be. So I will go with RVD being more likely. I'm not going to give a timetable for either one. Obviously, I don't even know how long RVD will be around, but yeah.
Yeah, Ziggler's like 32 or something like that. So, I mean, you're looking at he got a later start than well, he's been around longer than people think. But, I mean, what, Edge retired at what, like 38? And that was due to injury. So, yeah, 5 years from now, Ziggler will be 37. That's like how old John Cena is. So it's definitely not outside of the realm of possibility. Interesting, did Jericho actually, outside of the when he unified the belts, his future title reigns, were any of them with the WWE Championship, or were they all the World Heavyweight Championship?
World They were all the world. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
And that was when the world title was not quite as devalued as it is now, but
right.
It was almost seen as an equal if Triple H was on your show.
Right. That is true. Yeah. Now it's a sad parody of what it used to be. It's only there because of the physical belt itself.
Which is a beautiful belt. It is the most beautiful belt.
It is. And that's really why it's there, because of the physical belt. Without the physical belt, I don't think it would be where you know, would still be considered where it needs to be considered. But, yeah, it's weird that, you know, Jericho did hold that belt. But he did hold it when it was more prestigious. Now, of course, it's just a silly little prop around Alberto Del Rio's waist. So, not since Edge really has the belt been as meaningful, in my opinion. But that's just,
Edge's
again.
Edge's last reign?
Just Edge in general. He held that belt,
mm-hmm.
you know, seven times.
It was his belt, yeah.
It was his belt. So, you know, and in
that
third
belt
long,
is
four,
as much as the WWE was seen as, yeah.
Exactly. Like, that really was his belt. And he was, I think people realized how big of a deal he was to the company when he retired. Like, they went into a state of panic. I don't think anybody expected that.
Yeah.
So, CM Punk has held that belt three times. Like, it's amazing to think how many times some people have held that title.
Mm-hmm.
Mysterio twice. Like, it's just, you know, and of course, Great Khali held it once. Sad. Great Khali, by the way, held that belt longer than Christian did. In his two combined reigns, so
that's really sad
about that for a moment. Jack Swagger,
and that's
held
why
it
Great Khali is a future Hall of Famer, right?
I told you he will be. He'll go in the Hall of Fame. It'll be as a comedy act, but he's going to go in the Hall of Fame. Jack Swagger, by the way, held the belt longer than Dolph Ziggler. So, you know, again, food for thought.
More than Ziggler, because Jack Swagger knocked Ziggler the fuck out before he even got a chance to defend it.
That's true.
I'm pretty sure Ziggler only had one title defense on TV or pay-per-view, and that was when he lost it.
Yeah, sad. He might have had a TV one. I don't know. But it is sad. So, excellent. Good stuff there, Chad. So we'll see what's on board next week. Chad Perry, got to check the schedule and see if you're able to join the program next week, because we're in need of a co-host for next week. Patrick
Right.
had to step away for the week. So, right. Never know. Sometimes
I'll give it a look, and we will figure it out for sure.
We will find out. So, good stuff, Chad Perry. Love the new game, and the games are always good, and we'll do it again next week.
Absolutely. Have a good one.
Here we go. That's going to do it for Chad Perry. And like I said earlier, we do have holding on the line right now both parties. That are, of course, part of the Midnight Wrestling Review. So, yeah, let's get that going.
Did someone say Greg DeMarco's Midnight Wrestling Review with Tony Acero and Heather Lynn? The hardest hitting wrestling analysis.
Shut up! All right, I'm good. That thing's too long. So let's bring them both on right now. Tony Acero and Heather Lynn. Tony Acero, ring announcer extraordinaire, Tony Acero, as of this evening. So how'd it go, Tony?
It went well. I didn't make any mistakes, and I got a little bit more involved in the show than originally planned.
You eliminated a man from Battle Royal.
Yeah.
Which I'm pretty sure I've been sent the video of, just have not had a chance to watch because I'm hosting a radio program. But a video was sent to me by Derek Halley, who was at the event, and going to need to check that out. So outstanding. So did you follow my advice, Tony, my copious advice, including all the stuff I forgot to tell you and later texted you?
I did a majority of it. I separated the cards, and depending on who I was going to announce, and I didn't mess up once, so that's good news. I was kind of the head runner. I gave the sound guy the hand signals, and, you know, we've talked about it before. I was pretty you know, integral part of it going smoothly. But, yeah, somebody got in my face and made fun of me, and I decided, you know, he didn't need to be in the Battle Royal for the Apex Pro Heavyweight Championship.
Gotcha. Well, who came out on top? Did the title change hands?
No, it did not. Actually, SoCal Crazy kept the belt.
Still champion, so excellent. Good, because you just, you never know what can happen. So glad to hear it went well. Definitely love to hear more about it. From what I understand, this may not be the last of you and this person you eliminated from the Battle Royal either.
Yeah, I mean, you know me. I'm more of a backstage guy, but he really struck a chord with me, and I was able to pick him up over the top rope, so, you know, he must not be that strong.
Who was it? I don't even know who it was.
David E. Jones, part of Anchors Away, San Diego wrestler.
There we go. I believe that laugh is of Heather Lynn.
Sorry. I was just laughing at you and David. David's pretty funny, though. He's kind of mean.
So could this happen to
a nurse? You announced for Apex?
What's that?
You announced for Apex?
Yeah, I did.
Nice.
He did. In a pinch, Tony Acero came through once again. That's what Tony Acero does. That's what he do. If I can find the damn sound by there.
That's what I do.
Still an advocate of Mark Henry saying that on a microphone so I can have a better sound bite. But has not happened yet. So
I think he actually did. I was just at NXT this past Thursday and he was the guest appearance, but he did say it on the mic.
So I gotta wait like a month and a half to actually see it. So that's good.
Yes.
Because I think the much appreciated Sami Zayn Antonio Cesaro match was taped in like 2012. So not really, obviously, because he wasn't in the company in 2012. Sami Zayn. So you get to go to NXT now. Like I'm almost a little bit jealous that you get to go to NXT.
Yeah, it's like 20 minutes down the road. Not even, maybe 15 without traffic. And I'm finally in my apartment now, so that's good. And I'm about 15 minutes from there, and I went to the last show, and it was phenomenal. Like, Sami Zayn, holy crap. And Adrian Neville, Jesus, I'm excited for the future of WWE. Tell you that now.
Well, I think the future, and maybe it's what we can talk about, the future might be getting here sooner rather than later. I mean, like I mentioned before when we were talking about Dolph Ziggler, John Cena, 37 years old, banged up, taking, 4 to 6 months off right now. I'm not saying he's done, but he's definitely hitting the tail end of his career, and that's an era. A guy like John Cena going out is the end of an era, and which does mean bringing in a new era. And usually after a major era, there's a downturn. And given the business state of the WWE, I don't see them letting a downturn happen, which means they're going to have to strap that rocket ship to somebody. And who knows who that somebody is going to be. I don't think anybody expected it to be John Cena when it became John Cena. So we'll have to wait and be surprised by that. But you're right. Like, the future is definitely bright. There's some good talent in NXT. There's some people that, we might hear names and shake our head at, but there are some quality, talented individuals in NXT. And like you said, the future does seem to be in good hands, Heather.
It does. I haven't seen matches of that quality. Like, when I go to Raw or something, it's not even nearly as good as the girls' division alone. It just blows the girls on TV away. The only comparable one I can see on TV right now for the girls would be Natalia or Naomi. And these girls at NXT, they bust their ass because they're not in that spotlight yet. They're not in WWE, on main TV yet. So they bust their ass to get where they are, just like the guys do, too. So it's nice and kind of refreshing to see this kind of stuff because, you get so used to seeing what you see on WWE, the Raw and SmackDown, that it just gets old after a while. So to see fresh stuff and the gimmicks that they're pulling off over there, it's like, I think Fandango was kind of the start of the whole schmoozy, almost throwback to the 80s type gimmicks. And you can tell because they're starting to put out a little bit of different gimmicks that are a little bit outrageous. And you would probably have not seen them 10 to 15 years ago. And now they're starting to come back. So it's like cycling back through. But it's fascinating to watch it because I enjoyed the wrestling so much. It was incredible talent there. And then I know there's a lot of people who are waiting that haven't appeared on the shows yet that are going to be starting to appear soon that we're also excited to see.
Yeah, and Tony, remember when you covered NXT and it wasn't this NXT?
Oh, yeah. I remember. I'll never forget. about the time I hated Michael Cole the most.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was bad. Bad days for you back then. But you did it. You did it well, and you really – and, hey, you covered AJ. I mean, AJ before, you know, she was AJ. So, you know, it's –
damn right I covered her.
Hey, whatever it takes. Whatever it takes, that's for sure. So, that's – by the way, WWE NXT is now been moved from Hulu Plus to Hulu Free. So guess what, people? You no longer need Hulu Plus to watch NXT, and this is something that needs to be made a bigger deal out of because, you know, it gives more people the opportunity to see it, and maybe it's Hulu in general wants to grow, and I'm surprised they made the move, but maybe they figure with ads they can make more out of it that way. But yeah, now more people can see NXT. So. And Heather, did you get yourself on camera when you were checking out NXT? Like did you get on there?
On the camera?
Yeah.
Did I get seen? I don't know. I might have. I was in the crowd and I was kind of screaming and yelling. I might have danced when Emma came out. So if you see a silly looking girl and a little younger girl dancing with Emma, yeah, maybe.
Well, we'll have to wait and see, Tony. Have to wait. Emma, by the way, it's so funny. I don't think people realize how talented she is and how great of a wrestler she is because all I care about is her dancing. She's
phenomenal. Holy crap.
Yeah. I mean, she trained with Lance Storm. You know, tons of talent has come out of Australia, which is where she's from as well. You know, more than just a dance party when it comes to Emma. So not just Tony Acero's mom buying alcohol for everybody in the dance party, Tony. It's actually a talented wrestler.
All right.
Speaking of Tony's mom. You want to hear something crazy? 20 months ago, Brodus Clay debuted on television. 20 months ago.
Jeez.
I know. That's crazy that it's been 20 months. I'm so excited, too. I loved the Brodus Clay character. Now, it's just a member of a fat tag team. It's sad. Sad state of affairs. Tons of Funk. Who would have thought that the most talented person to come out of Tons of Funk is probably one of the cheerleaders? But which is not good for Tensai, a really talented professional wrestler, just not used as such. But you know, what can you do? That's just kind of the way it goes. So we haven't had an opportunity to speak on SummerSlam since it happened because you guys weren't here last week. So no surprise, obviously, Heather, because you and I both, amongst with some other people, called exactly what was going to happen. Although, did you think that – you thought that Cena was going to win and Orton was going to cash in, or did you think that Daniel Bryan was going to win?
No, I thought Daniel Bryan was going to win and cash in. And then Orton would cash in, and I said that, you know, they're going to let the universe have their moment for a minute and then, you know, take it away. And I mean, it works because DB is going to chase him now and try to get the belt back. I didn't see the Triple H thing coming, though.
Yeah, I didn't see the Triple H thing coming until it's just, you know, it's just kind of that awkwardness. You know, Daniel Bryan celebrating, Triple H still in the ring. Like, why is Triple H still in the ring? Like, I actually think he could have rolled out of the ring and then very easily rolled back in to make it a little less obvious, but it's okay. It worked. I thought the timing of it was perfect, and I definitely enjoyed it. And of course, Tony, we got to see the reaction of the internet firsthand to what happened and sort of maybe the overreaction of the IWC as well.
Right, yeah, that's kind of what I talked about in this week's 4-1-1 with 5-1, sorry. Now 6-1. And by the way, Greg, you just decided to piss everyone off.
I did.
It was a bit hard for me to articulate it. I even talked to Greg about it, but essentially it's the how there's certain expectations of results, and then there's also certain expectations of fans. And Brian was a perfect example where everyone that knew or claimed they knew what was going to happen was ready to defend those who were going to complain about it, essentially complaining about the complainers. But just from my view alone, I didn't see many people complain. And I'm not basing this off of me, you, and Heather, even though none of us are complaining about the results. I just saw a lot of people actually understanding where the WWE was coming from, how this is a good story, how Bryan could be made a bigger star, and blah, blah, blah. So what I saw was an immediate outrage of people complaining about people complaining, yet no one was complaining. Got it?
I do. I don't know if no one was complaining, but I definitely think it was the vocal minority, so to speak. Like outrage didn't match the population, so to speak. Like, I don't think there was as much of an outrage as people were saying there was. There were people that were pissed off and were saying, I saw the typical tweets as well as Facebook comments of people never going to watch again, never going to order a pay-per-view again. That's not true. You're going to order Night of Champions. Like, try to order. Or maybe you'll skip Night of Champions and order Hell in a Cell. Who knows? But you'll be back. You're not
those
going
are the same
there.
People... The same people that say they're never going to read the 5-1, and then we see them next week.
That's right. The only reason they're never going to read the 5-1 is because we changed the name. Other than that, they're still going to read it. And Daniel Bryan is on the chase now. And something that we talked about with Chad and with Patrick O'Dowd, Heather, do you think Daniel Bryan is here to stay at the top of the WWE? Like, is he now a new top face, or is this short term and he'll kind of return back to his spot on the card in due time?
I don't know. I think he has the drive to stay at the top because he's obviously worked hard to get to where he is. And if you look at his background, he was, you know, derided a lot for his size, and he had to overcome a lot of that. So I think as long as he keeps his drive, doesn't get sidelined by his girl or by, you know, injury, I think he can stay at the top. I think he's got what it takes. He's obviously a very talented performer, gives great promos. I mean, he's the new CM Punk with a shitload of tattoos, and you know, he was vegan, but he's not anymore. So. You know, he's great.
If you want to bring up CM Punk, you know, it's interesting. He is getting the same type of reaction that CM Punk gets and doesn't have to be nearly as controversial. Like he can do it within the structure of the storyline, whereas CM Punk's promos were, you know, caught the eye of people when they went outside of the storyline. So I'm not knocking CM Punk. It's just he's doing it in a very different way and getting very similar results right now because he's over like nobody's business. And you know, whether it's short-term or long-term. Dare I say, Heather, you know, maybe he turns out to be like Dolph Ziggler long-term. I don't know. And I know that's, you know, plug your ears maybe. I don't know, earmuffs. But because it's, you know, Ziggler, look where Ziggler is right now, not at the top of the card.
Yeah, I'm not very thrilled about that. But, I don't know. I mean, he does. Ziggler, the thing that bothers me with Ziggler is that he takes a lot of unnecessary bumps sometimes that are not needed, where, you know, it could shorten his career. And, you know, I think he needs to stay healthy, and he's very lucky, and I think he needs to stay very lucky. But I think if they get smart, they'll push him back to the top. I think just because the focus is a little bit diverted right now on you know, Danielson and O'Brien, I'm sorry, and Punk and Orton and Triple H now with the family. What is that, like Family Stone? But, you know, family nickname. But I think with all the attention on them, that right now it's kind of diverted a little bit from Ziggler. And I think he just needs something to push him back up again.
Yeah. It'll happen. I mean, everybody, there's ups and downs and people. Hell, they put Jack Swagger in a world title match at WrestleMania last year. Like, there'll be opportunities. I know. It's sad. It's sad to think that of the Jack Swagger and Antonio Cesaro tag team, it was Jack Swagger that was in a high-profile WrestleMania match. Antonio Cesaro got to watch from the back. So think about that for a minute, given what we just saw out of Cesaro. Because even in losing to Darren Young, Antonio Cesaro still looks like $1 million. And that's the other thing we haven't talked about, is the coming out of Darren Young. Tony, let's start with you. Kind of what were your thoughts on the coming out of Darren Young and really, I guess, kind of the renewed push now, face push of the primetime players since that happened?
Okay. No, actually, I don't – I remember when you asked me about it, if I was going to write about it because you were going to write about it and whatnot, and I didn't have much to say in terms of him coming out, mainly because we're in a world where it's not a big deal for someone to be gay. However, it is a big deal in wrestling, and I don't think many people understand that, because wrestling as a whole is way far behind in terms of societal expectations and mores. I mean, whether you're talking about racism or sexism, whether people like to admit it or not, wrestling is behind. there's... You know, at least on the higher level, you know, not necessarily in the indies, but still, like, at least on the higher level, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. So for him to just say it and say it in such a blasé way, it's applaudable. It's something you look at and say, well, good for you. Now, as far as the push goes, I think that as long as the reasoning isn't exposed, like, as long as they don't attempt to make him some sort of Rico or Orlando Jones, or Jordan, as long as he doesn't come out and, you know, as long as that is not the focal point of his character, then why not? I've been very vocal about the primetime players and how I find them average in the ring. However, the best thing to say about people that are average in the ring is that they can always get better. And I think that they have, and that's including Titus. So as a tag team, I'm behind their push, mainly because it's a tag team, and I like tag team wrestling.
And they're still entertaining. Like, even, you know, outside of the ring, like, their characters are entertaining. At least I find them entertaining. I'm not going to speak for
you. Yeah, you know,
for
Greg,
you.
On that, like, the entertaining aspect, whenever you see a black character on WWE, it's almost always a caricature of a character. These guys,
yeah.
This is not crime time. You know what I mean? They're funny.
Right.
They have the black attitude. You know they're black, obviously. But it doesn't come across as fake or exaggerated. It comes across as people that are just want some money. You know, it is what it is. You know, and they have that what the kids call swag these days, but I call it personality. They have it. You're drawn to them, whether they're heel or not. You like watching them.
Yeah, no, I definitely enjoyed watching them. Like I said, I was with you. Like, I wanted them to get pushed before this happened. I don't care that this is the reason they're getting pushed. I'm just glad that they're getting a push. Heather, what about you? What was your reaction to the coming out? And then, of course, what's happened since then with Darren Young and the primetime players?
Well, first, Tony's right about the sexism and stuff in the wrestling, but it is in the indies as well, and I've experienced it many times firsthand. And they are behind. So him coming out is a huge deal in wrestling because maybe not to the rest of the world because a lot of people do it these days. You know, they feel more comfortable, obviously, that they can come out. But when you are in a position that he was in and you're seen by a lot of people, and a lot of these people have children and they may not want their children to know stuff like that. You know, so for him to come out like that was very brave because he puts himself at risk. But it was smart because maybe it'll open up some people's eyes and they won't be so scared anymore. But the funny thing is, too, is I was watching SmackDown and they came out and you see little kids dancing to the music still. And, I mean, they probably know what it is, you know, that he's gay. And I don't find it a big, like, they didn't find it a big deal where nobody was, like, booing him or making faces or, you know, just not cheering or anything. Like, the crowd popped pretty huge when he came out. And I was really happy to see that kids were still dancing to the music and people were still cheering him on. And I've always liked the primetime players because they kind of remind me of old school Edge and Christian with a lot of their antics when they get really silly. So I'm glad they're getting the push. I mean, I know it's coming because he came out that he's gay, but I still think it's a well-deserved push.
Yeah, I mean, it's so do you, and I'll pose it to both of you, should they acknowledge that he's gay on television?
Yes.
I don't find the necessity to do it. I don't care. If it happens, it happens. But I don't, you know me, I want story. So if it adds to some story, then sure. But if it's just to let you know, then there's really no reason for it.
Yeah, to me, it's more advancing the cause of gay athletes than it is, than him in general, to be honest with you. Because if you look at wrestlers as professional athletes, and I think we should, he is the first openly gay professional athlete currently active, because Jason Collins is not signed to any NBA team. So he's sort of the trailblazer in that. And I'm sure there have been other, you know, gay wrestlers who that we don't even know about. I'm not talking about Orlando Jordan. I'm not talking about Canyon. I'm not talking about Pat Patterson. Some of the guys backstage that we have seen and watched perform, and we just didn't know, that the talent probably knew about, because I'm assuming you guys have seen the John Cena video. He obviously knew before, you know, a guy from TMZ approached him about it, because he even said the word finally came out about it towards the end of his comments. So, you know, they're there. There's gay athletes in every professional locker room. I think it should just be acknowledged to further that cause in general. Really doesn't have a whole lot to do with Darren Young. I think calling him the first openly gay wrestler in the modern-day WWE is no different than calling Kurt Angle an Olympic gold medalist or Mark Henry the world's strongest man. Just a very different social impact of that. So we'll see. We'll see where it goes. Do you think they win the tag titles this year? In 2013, Heather, we'll start with you. Do you think they hold that gold before the year is up?
I think so. If not early 2014, but that's where I see it going. And obviously, they don't really have a big tag team division right now. I think, you know, the Shield is, you know, two of the guys and they can work, but their tag team division's pretty limited at this point. So anything to give it a little bit of a pop, it's going to work. So I do think they'll get the titles by the end of the year.
Tony, will they be champs?
Yeah, they will. You know, it is limited, but it's growing. And, I mean, I'm not one, and we never should be. And any listener, I want you to take this to your grave. Like, literally, do not get excited right now. But tag teams are coming up once again. We've got Primo and Epico coming back for some ungodly reason as Matadors.
Those Matadors. And, yeah, I'm excited about that.
And, you know, and then, you know, we've got Swagger and Cesaro. We've got the Usos. We've got enough to make this interesting again. Now, I don't know if they're going to, but I think that primetime players are one of the more interesting ones. I will say that I'm surprised how well the Usos has gotten over. But I think it's about that time where they're going to try to research the tag team division again. Don't know how long it'll last. Don't know if it'll even last a week. But I can see the writing on the wall, and they're at least attempting to. And with the primetime players getting the win over the Real Americans, who just got a win over the Usos, I believe that they're really close to it. It's only a matter of time.
You act like wins and losses matter. That's so silly. So silly to think that wins and losses. No, it could. And you're right. Like, the talent is there for them to have the division. They just have to want to have the division. And with 3 hours of Raw and potentially in the future 3 hours of SmackDown, why not have the division? I just don't understand why, you know, why not? I mean, it's there. It's TV time. It's talent you can push. Merchandise you can sell. Seems to make full sense to me. So we will see. Last point that I want to make, and it was, you know, kind of goes to what Tony was talking about, how I managed to piss off an entire reader base. Almost some people do agree with me, and it's TNA, but it's still something we're able to talk about. AJ Styles' contract in TNA reportedly expiring in September brought up, of course, all this talk about the potential of AJ Styles going to the WWE at some point. Heather, do you see it happening, and do you want to see it happen?
You mean he's not there already? Because at NXT, there was a guy wearing blue and white tights with mechanics gloves, and he came out with a hat on backwards, and he had, like, the overcoat, And he did a Pele kick during his match, and he also did the arms thing during his match that AJ Styles does. Oh, that was Curt Hawkins. Yeah, they turned him into AJ. And I freaked the hell out when I saw that, because I said, if he throws a Pele kick, I'm done. And sure enough, he did the Pele kick. And I was like, oh, my God. It was horrifically horrifying to watch. But I think WWE kind of did, like, it's a new gimmick look for Hawkins. So I think WWE might kind of be, if they're not feeding this, you know, fuel to the fire, they're kind of slapping somebody in the face, because I swear to you, it was like watching AJ walk out. So I actually thought it was him for a minute when he first came out, because he posed just like him and everything. And I was with a couple friends of mine, and they were like, who is that? And we looked, and we're like, that's Curt Hawkins. And it's kind of weird. It's almost a little creepy, like white girl type thing. But I don't know if WWE, they're doing it on purpose or not, but it looks like he's already there. And
it would be an interesting way to say he ain't so special anybody could do it, to kind of throw Curt Hawkins in there. Which could definitely throw a monkey wrench in some of the things that I've predicted. But, hey, who knows? I still don't think Curt Hawkins is in any way the talent level of AJ Styles. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he could be, and he just hasn't had the opportunity. Who knows? You know, Curt Hawkins, very talented wrestler, much younger than AJ Styles. He wasn't the phenomenal Curt Hawkins, was he?
No, I'm surprised. It should have been like the tremendous Curt Hawkins or something.
Tremendous Curt Hawkins. That would be outstanding. Oh, my goodness. I wonder if AJ Styles saw that and was just like,
really? 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 Really?
Because
That's how I felt watching it.
Yeah, because I do think there's a part of this that's just, you know, positioning by AJ Styles to be, you know, to get a better contract out of TNA, if he even gets the contract out of TNA. Who the hell knows? Tony, would you want to see AJ Styles in TNA or in WWE?
There's only room for one AJ in my heart.
No.
That's true. That is true. How could we dare overlook? How could we? You make a good point.
Nobody really knows this, but
Tony Vassero,
the softest lip. And sometimes at night we spoon.
I always wonder why her voice gets really deeper on Tony's name.
That's just what he does.
Nobody really knows this, but
Tony Vassero,
the softest lip. And sometimes, at night, we spoon.
No one makes her feel the way that Tony Acero does. That's just all it is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just how it goes. And
cover her, you know.
He did.
Yes.
He did cover her.
Covered her for a long time.
Well, you know, you have to keep it covered.
Tony Vassero.
You are not the fire.
Keep it covered. Exactly. So yeah. So anyway, I guess, no, you don't want to see the Styles in WWE?
You know, it's not that I don't want to. I'd be interested just to see what they would do. So it's like, I guess it's more of a, I don't want to say apathy, because it's not like I don't care. I've seen AJ wrestle. I've seen him do I've seen him do great things with horrible characters. I've seen him survive certain things that he probably never should have been a part of. You know, I've seen him be lynched on TV, and yes, that is a pun. And still be able to, you know, get out of it. And I do believe that, you know, he's always been that big fish in the small pond. However, when you take that aspect and you throw it into an even bigger pond or the ocean, he may flounder. He may not be exactly what we want him to be, or what he wants to be, or where he wants to be. I don't know if politics would play into it. I don't know if they would be, you know, detrimental to his career. I don't know. What I do know, though, is that even the thought of him going to WWE pissed a hell of a lot of people off. And it's almost making me say, fuck it, bring him over, because, you know, it's our job to make people angry, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I'll tell you this. The amount of anger that my writing about AJ Styles has caused other websites to contact me about writing editorial pieces. I will say that. And that hasn't happened since the last time I was pissing people off. So pissing people off is a good thing. Again, remember all the Taylor Hendricks controversy with when, you know, she came on the show and Dixie Carter called her fat, and then it wasn't Dixie Carter, and this and that. A lot of women began to inquire about coming on the show more than normal. So it's funny, you know, what that attention does.
You know, I just want to make it clear that I support Greg DeMarco in every single thing that he says and does in the column. That does not mean that I agree or that I even give a damn. So lumping both him and I as a unit in the column is just idiotic. I mean, you know, someone saying that I was bashing TNA and ROH. I don't think I've ever said the letters ROH in that column. I don't once, like not even once. And TNA, the only time I say TNA is when I'm talking about tits and ass. So I just don't get it. I mean, you know, I would rather they insult us separately than as a unit, because I just, it makes me feel better, and at least I know.
They just don't really have the ability to realize that more than one person can write a column. Like it's because what we're doing is different and isn't really done anywhere else. And so that for some reason causes people to think differently. So,
and there's bylines that say our names, that, and we have a distinct style that you're like, you're in the face of the reader. You're like, boom, 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 and I take forever to get to my damn point. So, like, it's obvious who's saying what. It's not like we're so blasé that you can't tell. It's just a matter of, oh, I don't like what was said here, so I'm just going to talk shit.
Yeah, no, it's I completely agree, 100%. You brought up Claire Lynch, and we
did
when,
I?
When
did
we,
I really?
You did. You did. And we had Leva Bates on this show several months ago when Claire Lynch happened. We talked about the Claire Lynch role. Heather, if you were living in Florida at the time that TNA was hiring someone to play Claire Lynch, would you have been willing to play the Claire Lynch character and be on television that prominent of a role?
I'm not quite sure I'm that desperate to be on television. you know, I mean, it was a pretty bad role, and it kind of everybody saw it coming. And I just, I don't know. It has to be really good money for me to be able to do that, because, like, I'd have to go back and try to get work after that. Good luck.
But had a more talented person who actually understood the wrestling business played the role, do you think it would have been? Cause she was terrible. I mean, the actress was terrible, and didn't understand the world of professional wrestling. Like, do you think that someone like you, who is better at it than she is, and is in wrestling, and is far more attractive than the actress playing Claire Lynch was, do you think you would have done better with it and gotten a better reaction than she did?
I certainly would have tried, but I don't think it was a testament to her knowing about wrestling. I think it was more of her acting ability, which was horrible. And she wasn't very attractive. She looked like a crackhead. And but they needed somebody to kind of look like a crackhead, because I guess the whole point was for her to go to rehab or whatever. But I don't think it mattered to wrestling ability. I think it mattered to acting ability, and she was just not a good actress. But that's what happens when they probably just said, hey, find us an actress to play somebody. So I don't think I would have tried to do a better job, but I don't. I mean, with that, you know, kind of role to play, it would have been not fun.
They should have got Shelton Benjamin's mama.
No, that would have been entertaining. Well, the problem is that they weren't willing to go all the way with the angle. Like, you've got to be willing to go with it to actually make it happen. And I think that's part of it too. Is they never intended for AJ to really be involved with this person, and so she had you played the role better and had you booked it better, you could have actually developed a heel knockout in the long run, but that just wasn't what they were going to do. So it's just kind of the way it went. But it was just interesting because everyone seems to have this aversion to that character, and maybe rightfully so. So awesome. So Raw's coming up tomorrow, and one of the things that we want to do a little bit more of is kind of talk about Raw and the things that are coming up on Raw and sort of the things that we want to see or things that we should see. So Heather, what do you think we need to see on Raw tomorrow?
Obviously, we're going to see Triple H and Stephanie. We'll see DB. We'll see a tag team match, probably the Primetime Players. I don't know. I guess Punk, but I really couldn't tell you. I know probably the Primetime Players for sure. Dan O'Brien for sure and the McMahon family. Are you going?
No. I actually have to work. By the time I get off work, it's started already. It's the thing about my job, unfortunately, is I get off work at 7 p.m. Pacific time. So 10 p.m. Eastern time. So yeah, no, I'm not going.
Oh, boo.
I know. It's a sad state of affairs, but, you know, it's okay. I'll be all right. I'll live. I've missed worse or better. I've missed better. How about that? Tony, outside of AJ, and you didn't say Dolph Ziggler, by the way, Heather. I'm kind of surprised. Tony, outside of AJ. True. What do you think we need to see on Raw? What do they need to tell us, need to show us?
Well, you know, what they don't need to do is show me more Curtis Axel. But that's just a personal thing. They need CM Punk to beat his ass again. However, I will say that having Heyman fully believe in Curtis Axel is both important and intriguing. So he's saying, like, you're going to face Curtis Axel, and this is a big fucking deal. We all know it's not, but I like that. I like that a lot. So if Heyman's, we're going to need Heyman to do that again for sure. We're going to need Brian to cut a promo that is just slightly different than what he's been doing the past couple of times, where he's accentuating the fact that he's a wrestler, because he needs to be pissed off now, not just a wrestler, but also an angry little fucker, you know, like a chihuahua / troll that's just mad. so I would like to see a little bit more passion from him, which isn't a knock, because he's doing great, and he's got the crowd in the palm of his hands. You know, when I was at Raw, the crowd was amazing. Just looking at it all as a whole, and I mean, it was like everyone drank the fucking Kool-Aid. All the hands were in the air at the same time, and he's got it. It doesn't matter where he goes, because LA crowds suck ass. I've been to many shows, and man, they are lazy, lethargic, and fat, and they just don't care sometimes. So for him to do that is great. I think that's going to continue. I want to see a little bit more expansion on how the hell Ricardo has anything to do with RVD aside from drugs. I would love to see AJ, of course, in a Iron Man match versus me. I think that I wouldn't mind getting a glimpse of Eva Marie, you know, just saying hi. How you doing? What's up, girl? But they do need to advance. They've got Night of Champions coming up, and usually that pay-per-view is pretty solid. They need to focus a little bit on the belts, though. They need to build shit so that we don't have one more week to go, and all of a sudden we've got a random-ass Divas title match, Intercontinental Championship match, United States Championship match. You know, they've got a lot of pieces in place. They need to put them in the right order, and they're going to have a great pay-per-view build.
Yep. No, and to be honest with you, I really couldn't have said it better myself, nor can I, because the Blog Talk Radio lady's probably going to cut us off. So, I know. So that's basically going to do it for this week's edition of the Greg DeMarco Show. Tune in next week. We'll have a different co-host because Patrick Redoubt is a week off. We also have a great guest coming up.